show tonight.
This immigration is killing Europe. And the other thing, stop the windmills.
The view, it seems, not just of Donald Trump, but of most of us as well. Immigration is destroying this country's communities, shattering Britain's cohesion, tearing our social fabric to shreds. At least according to two-thirds of people who think that immigration is having a negative impact on our way of life, including, interestingly, even a majority of Labour voters. But is immigration really responsible for the breakdown I think we can all witness in this country? Has your community been destroyed in that way? Or are immigrants just easy scapegoats for pretty much everything that's going wrong in Britain right now?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Keir Starmer and Donald Trump have agreed urgent action must be taken to end suffering in Gaza. The two leaders are in Aberdeen for a private dinner at the US President's other Gulf resort following talks in South Ayrshire. Mr. Trump's agreed to speak to the Israeli Prime Minister about the humanitarian crisis, but also expressed frustration at Hamas. Foreign Affairs analyst Tim Marshall has told LBC, while the situation is bad, he thinks claims of starvation have been exaggerated.
The first time they said there was starvation was in December of 2023, and pretty much every single month since. However, I do think that the recent publicity about the suffering of the Gazans has become so great that Hamas realised public opinion is turning, and so that could have been a rationale to hang on and not advance peace talks.
Two men have died and a third is in a life-threatening condition after four people were stabbed at a business premises in South London. Police were called to an address in Southwark this afternoon. A man in his 30s has been detained in hospital. Meanwhile, Donald Trump's expressed his growing frustration with Vladimir Putin. The US president's reduced a 50-day ultimatum to take steps to end the war in Ukraine to around 10 days. Scotland's First Minister says an SNP majority in next year's Holyrood elections would be a mandate for another independence referendum. John Swinney's announced the plans to campaign for another public vote on Scotland leaving the UK. Some learners are waiting more than 5 months for a driving test. The latest figures show 80% of test centres have the highest possible waiting times. The Driver and Vehicle Standards Agency says it's working to improve test booking rules. The Lionesses are back in the UK after becoming the first senior England team to return from the overseas tournament with a trophy. Huge crowds were at Southend Airport to welcome the team who successfully defended their Euros title. These fans, who play for a local football team, have told LBC they're an inspiration.
That was a night to remember.
It was a great game. England v Spain's always going to be, but I'm so happy they brought it home again.
The Lionesses attended a reception at Downing Street this evening before an open-top bus tour in London tomorrow. In the City, the FTSE 100 has closed up 49 points, 83.72. The pound buys $1.23 and €1.17. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
It's 10 o'clock. Hello, good evening. Great to be back with you tonight. Ben Kentish here with you right through until 1 on LBC. Coming up, remember that Glastonbury summer, the height of Corbyn mania back in 2018? Well, it seems it might be coming back, at least among young people. They're flocking, apparently, towards Corbyn's new party, but also towards Nigel Farage. But why? Your thoughts on that after 11. And
England lift the trophy high as they are crowned European champions once again.
It's another stunning Euros win for England's Lionesses, prompting calls today for them to be paid exactly the same prize money as the blokes get, which is only fair, isn't it? Or is it? More on that to come. And
I can't be doing these weekly job centre meetings. Can you just get them off my back and just give me this note of referral?
600,000 university graduates in this country are now claiming benefits, it's revealed today. What on earth is going on?
Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
4 is the time. Very good to be back with you this evening. I want to start tonight with a poll that paints a picture of a country, this country, that I wonder if you recognise. It's a country where a massive influx of people from other countries over the last 20 years has torn our communities apart, where the bonds and the relationships that used to exist between people who shared a street or a village or a town or even a city no longer exist, where the sort of cohesion that every country needs, the sort of glue that binds us all together, has been eroded. Eroded not just because of social media or changes in the way that we live our lives, or even, I don't know, rampant capitalism or economic pressure, but specifically by one thing, and even more specifically, by one group of people. Immigrants. Is that a country you recognise? Is that the story of Britain in 2025? Because if your answer to that question is yes, you are not alone. Far from it, in fact. According to a new YouGov poll today, two-thirds of people in this country say that they think immigration has had a significant impact on community cohesion. Only a fifth think that it hasn't. And of course, that's long been an argument that's been made on the right of politics. For years, the likes of Nigel Farage and Suella Braverman and Robert Jenrick have been arguing that immigration is destroying our way of life. Nothing new there. But it seems it's an argument that is finding ever more fertile ground on the left of our political system. It's not just the right that thinks this now. 62% of people who voted Labour in the last election think that immigration is having a negative effect on Britain's cohesion. Even half of Green Party voters have that view. Which is interesting, I think, because it suggests that in this increasingly divided world we live in, there is at least one thing that left and right now agree on, that immigration is harming this country's social fabric. So is that a sign, is that consensus a sign of what is now an indisputable reality about the negative impact and the damage that immigration is doing to our communities? If that is your view, I'd love to hear from you this hour on 0345 60 60 973. If that many people think it's true, if Green Party voters and Tory voters and Reform voters and Labour Party voters and even some Lib Dems think that immigration is shattering our social cohesion, is that a sign that it must just be true? It has to be a fact, or that many people wouldn't believe it. And if you think it is true, tell me if you would about how it's affected your community. Because it can't just be this abstract thing that's going on. We can't just sit there and say, in principle, immigration is destroying our communities, unless it is destroying mine and it's destroying yours. So if you think that is happening where you are, where you live, in your street, in your town, in your city, tell me what that looks like. What does it mean to say immigration is destroying our cohesion? What does that look like where you are? 0345 60 60 973. And I'm particularly interested to hear from you, particularly interested to hear from this hour, if you are someone who sees yourself as a bit on the left, you generally vote Labour, Lib Dem, Green, particularly interested to hear from you on whether you buy this idea that cohesion, integration, trust, whatever you want to call it, is being shattered, and being shattered specifically because of immigration and maybe even immigrants. Give me a call if you've got thoughts on that. Would love to hear them. You can text me on 84850. You can WhatsApp the main number, 0345 60 60 973. Come to your calls in just a couple of minutes' time. Let's talk first this evening to Jovan Owusu-Nepal, political campaigner, writer, who was the Labour Party's candidate who took on Nigel Farage in Clacton and lost, sorry, Jovan, at the 2024 general election. Great to have you with us on the programme. This idea, this kind of widespread idea, Jovan, that immigration is shattering the bonds that tie us together in this country. Do you accept that? Is that true? Is that reality?
Well, good evening, and thanks for having me on. I don't accept that line of argument, but at the same time, I can understand as to how and why people feel that way about the current situation. And it comes after a generation with a housing crisis, where there has been largely inaction around public services, in our education system, in the National Health Service, in all of the key bits of infrastructure that people are having a day-to-day interaction with their local services. They just aren't receiving the services that they're paying for. And so I think it's quite easy then to turn the blame on people who are coming over here trying to make a life for themselves. And I think it fools a larger picture as to how Britain somehow is in a steady state of decline because nobody's had the boldness or the confidence to grapple with quite fundamental structural issues that have been left to rot, I think, for the last 40 years or so.
So immigrants are just scapegoats, Raven?
Well, that would be kind of my view, at least. I think as things are getting much tougher, we're seeing a cost of living crisis, there is economic downturn, the country is not as productive or as prosperous as it once was, it's quite easy to victimise and scapegoat some of the most vulnerable people who are trying to make a living and who are trying to flee quite desperate situations from horrific parts of the world.
But what you're saying is that the two-thirds of people who think this, the 62% of Labour voters who think this, are all wrong.
No, not at all. I mean, what I am saying is that where the government have needed to be bold, and that comes around integration and assimilation as well, the fact that governments haven't made a steady case as to what British values are. I think we need to reinterrogate what Britain looks like for the 21st century. There has been no national conversation for a significant period of time that hasn't been dominated by a story of immigration as to what Britain is today and what it stands for the future. And largely we've just excluded people and said that, well, you're not welcome or you're not this person because of X, Y, and Z. I think we need to have an honest conversation with ourselves as we are today, what we want to look like for the future, and who those people are that are going to kind of contribute to the society that we're living in. I mean, we're seeing the fact that our welfare state is in need of...
It's not really about economics, this, Jovan. I'm not sure it's about whether you can get a job or a home or a GP appointment. This is about how people feel about relationships, about the people around them, about whether they feel part of a community, about whether they know their neighbours. And more of us don't feel those things. And more people, according to this poll, think that is because of mass migration.
Well, I think the problem here is that immigration has been almost divorced from a conversation around the economy. The idea that the economy and the welfare state can function as it has done for the last 60 or 70 years without the contributions of people from all around the world in our National Health Service. We haven't integrated the conversation of immigration into the economy. And so then when we talk about immigration, it's seen as kind of an adage to our economic success or our economic story without actually understanding the very many people, immigrants and people here in the UK who contribute.
Sure, but both those things can be true. It can be absolutely true that immigrants contribute a lot, that their economy relies on them, that our public services would be in an awful state, even worse state than they are already, if we didn't have them. And it can be true that having, over a 20-year period, millions and millions of people coming to a country who, in some cases, don't speak the language, have different cultures, in some cases, some people say don't integrate and so on, Jovan, that can cause tensions and breakdown in community as well.
Oh, yeah, and I completely accept that because I can see how people can lose their sense of community and feel as though maybe the areas that they live in no longer reflects what they used to live in. And that is an issue that has to be addressed. It has to be looked at sensitively. There has to be, as I said, a national conversation as to Britain today, also the future of Britain. We just haven't had that national conversation, I think, over the last 20 years. And in so doing, we've kind of just scapegoated people who've come to this country having fled some horrifying situations, and there's been nothing around recourse to public funds. Many people have been put in hotels at the behest of local communities. There have been nothing to integrate people around English speaking, a value system, what does Britain represent today. And I think until we have that conversation, we're just going to find ourselves going round and round, scapegoating people coming from very vulnerable situations, all the while some of our poorest people in the UK are just getting poorer and poorer and life becomes more and more difficult.
Which is not an argument. That argument you're making is not one you really hear from anybody else in mainstream politics. It's not one you hear the Labour Party making, the Tories. It's not one you hear even hear the sort of the smaller left-wing parties making as much anymore. Would you like to see Keir Starmer and Labour make a far more positive argument for immigration than the one they are?
Well, I think it's essential if Britain, as we understand it today, with all of the institutions and the welfare state, to continue into the next, hopefully, 100 years. But the fact that up to 60% of people have some ambivalence or are disgruntled around the levels of immigration today, surely is an indicator that we need to have a conversation, that we need to hash out our ideas, we need to have a debate, have a discussion so we can collectively move forward. Otherwise, what's going to happen is people are just going to get more and more angry with more and more different people coming from all around the world who may not be integrating, and that can be causing greater levels of community discord. And that's just not the type of future that I think many people want to see. People want to have a sense of agency. People want to feel as though their voices are heard and that a national conversation is had around these subjects. I think it's a lot easier for politicians and those in charge to kind of scapegoat and provide quite simple answers around how we're going to address these issues. Yeah. I think most reasonable people recognise that that's not the case. And if we are to be a sustainable future going forward, we do have to kind of sit down and talk to each other.
Interesting. Thank you very much indeed for coming on and talking to us. Jovan Owusu-Naipaul, political campaigner and writer, the Labour Party's candidate who took on Nigel Farage in Clacton at the 2024 general election. Interested in your thoughts on this. This poll that finds two-thirds of us think that our communities are being destroyed and being destroyed specifically by immigration. Is that view, or are you with Jovan that actually we're just scapegoating people for things that are going on that has absolutely nothing to do with them? 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. It comes, of course, after those anti-migrant protests in Epping continued over the weekend. It comes after the government warned Angela Rayner about the social fabric being torn up. Only today, police announced they're setting up a social media unit that's going to keep track of public anger that might spill over into violence on the streets. And only this afternoon, meeting Keir Starmer in Scotland, another dire warning from Donald Trump about mass migration.
Because, you know, Europe is a much different place than it was just 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And they've got to get their act together. If they don't, you're not going to have Europe anymore as you know it. And you can't do that. This is a magnificent part of the world, and you cannot ruin it. You cannot let people come in here illegally. And what happens is there'll be murderers, there'll be drug dealers, there'll be all sorts of things that other countries don't want. And they send them to you, and they send them to us, and you've got to stop them. And I hear that you've taken a very strong stand on immigration, and taking a strong stand on immigration is imperative.
Is he right? Your calls on that just after this. 10:16.
This is LBC.
The people of Britain have bought loads of noise-cancelling headphones. With a Barclaycard Rewards credit card, you could get cash back on eligible purchases and no fees on spending overseas. What you buy is your business. Rewarding you is ours. Subject to financial status, T's and C's apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 28.9% APR representative variable and 28.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Psst, have you heard?
About what?
About Boots Optician's ultimate eye test with OptiMap scan.
Why are you whispering?
I think it's for VIPs. It's an in-depth look into your eye that can detect health conditions that other eye scans might miss.
Why are you still whispering?
I can't seem to stop.
Book an eye test and ask about OptiMap in-store at Boots Opticians, rated the UK's favourite opticians.
Selected stores, charges apply. Google review data, May 2024 to May 2025 of national chain opticians only. Contact marketing at boots-opticians.co.uk for details.
Save this summer with Lidl. Our mini mix has something for everyone. With a pack of 12 Von Gelati ice creams down to just £2.45 with Lidl Plus. That's how you master a meltdown. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this summer today.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LBTV. Offer ends 30th of July.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's 10:18. Straight to your calls. Is immigration really destroying our communities in the way that two-thirds of us tell YouGov pollsters today that they think it is? And if it is, tell me about what that looks like where you are. Let's talk to Matt in Worcester tonight. Hello, Matt.
Yeah, hello, Ben. I think that one of the main problems, as I see it, is this lack of joined-up thinking. I just see that these people are human beings like me and you, but I also view them through a business perspective, and they are a valuable resource. We're just locking them up in luxury hotels. If I were in government, I would look to find a way to issue them 2-3-year work visas, not on comparable wages to what Brits would get. So the wages would be much lower, but at least comparable with what they would have got in their home countries. And I'd get them building our homes and building our prisons. I'd have very strict rules. We could tag everybody because obviously it takes time to find out who people are. So everybody would need to wear a tag. And we should guarantee their safety. First and foremost, we should guarantee that and then process them properly in due course. But I would issue them straight away with work visas, give them £5 an hour or so, and get them building our homes that we need, the prisons that we need.
Do you think people would buy that, Matt? Because, yes, of course, there's anger about benefits and how much we're paying for hotels and so on. Understandable anger. But for a lot of people, it's more fundamental. It's about the fact that this country has changed significantly in the last 20, 30 years because of mass migration. And a lot of people feel they had no say over that.
I think that the large part of the anger is that there are people that are struggling to find housing. And these illegal migrants that have come here, broken the rules. Remember, British people do not like rule breakers. And then we're housing them in hotels. It's unthinkable for our culture to break the rules and then get a free hotel room. It's just unthinkable. But if people were to see them, Ben, building the country, building our homes, on less wages than us, then of course they could be integrated. But we all need to pull together, and we need to draw up a contract between us and them that most people are happy with. And right now, most people are not happy with seeing them having these people having their potential wasted, locked up in luxury hotels, and obviously forced to do these gig economy jobs.
Talk to me about where you are, Matt, in Worcester. Has your community been destroyed by immigration in the way that a lot of people think theirs has?
Where I am, no, I don't feel it is. But I'm from Worcester. I'm actually I'm somebody that works predominantly online, and I'm very fortunate that I get to travel. But I honestly can say that I'm a Christian and I'm a church going guy, and I feel that I meet many of these people in different churches that I go to, and I just feel the calling to be a good Samaritan is stronger than ever within me. And I certainly think that part of being a good Samaritan would be to get these people working, and would be getting them to work at preferential rates to the rest of us, particularly when they've broken a rule to get here.
All right, Matt, appreciate the call. Thank you very much indeed. Daniel's a new caller tonight in Luton. Daniel, welcome to you. Good to have you with us.
Yep, thank you for having me. I just would like to say a few things. Skilled worker migrant who's been in the past 3 years here as a professional, obviously, but... what I see is, I've seen lots of people who call themselves natives going really bitter and really feeling anger, feeling left behind, comparing at workplace and the like. I've experienced it quite a number of times, discrimination from them. I try to see their grievance, but that's not on me, really. I'm here on a shortage list as skilled worker migrant, but the other part of it is like, you know, if I came to this country, which I could, as asylum seeker, to be honest, as rightfully one of my colleagues also said, when I was languishing and experiencing significant discrimination at workplace, like I would have been in, like, you know, 3-5-star hotel and have everything done for me, and I didn't have to fend for myself to begin with.
So you've come here, Daniel. You're on the shortage list. So you're doing a job that we need doing because not enough people here were doing it, and you feel that you're being blamed by the people you live amongst for a lot of things that are going wrong that you don't think are your fault.
And that includes now Starmer, to be honest. So punishing skilled worker migrants on shortage list. Now this new white paper and this proposal to extend like for 10 years as opposed to 5 years. Like, you know, I was seeing like probably the light at the end of the tunnel. After 5 years, I may qualify for permanent residence, and I don't have to experience this level of discrimination. But that's not the case.
So this,
now,
this,
the so-called... Sorry?
Sorry, Daniel. I was just going to say, that, you know, there's this sort of idea that we like to tell ourselves, and our politicians like to tell us, that we're a compassionate, tolerant, open, welcoming country. Is that your experience of the country that you moved to?
That was my assumption, and that was what I thought. And to be honest with you, that's really heartbreaking. You know what? I came to this country 16 years ago while I was studying in Europe, mainland Europe. So I came up here as a visitor, and you know, those people I know at that time, they advised me just to seek asylum because I could qualify from, I came from one of really repressing regimes back home. I could qualify right away. Back then, it was just straightforward. And I said I wouldn't do it. I just went back to my uni, and I qualified. I graduated. Mm. It took me more than 13 years to come to this country legally.
Work hard, do a job that we need doing.
Qualified, and everything.
And constantly be told
really
that...
Sorry,
Daniel. I was just going to say, and constantly be told that you're destroying our way of life.
That's the thing. Mm. That's the thing. So I'm God-fearing, law-abiding. I pay my taxes, work my seat off day and night. That's the thing. Well, at the end of the day, the system is broken. I contribute to the country and to the economy. Now, when Starmer said these people, they need to work for it, and they need to qualify for it, exactly, quote-unquote, for this permanent resident. Rather, other than paying your tax, doing all the right thing for solid 5 years, what else could you do to qualify?
Daniel, appreciate the call. I hear you loud and clear. Working hard, paying your taxes, contributing, constantly being told that you are part of a problem that is destroying this country and everything that's good about it. Thank you, Daniel. Let's talk to Ryan in Leek about this. Ryan, I mean, you heard Daniel there saying stop scapegoating migrants. It's the same thing our guest Jovan was saying. Do you think they're right?
I don't think it's as simple as a community being ruined. I don't think it's as simple as sort of a postcode, a town, a hamlet, a city. I think it goes sort of deeper than that. I think, so me, I'm part of rock community, metalhead through and through. And personally, I don't feel safe at gigs anymore. You know, I went to Download Festival this year. I've literally just been sat in a pub with somebody who was crowd surfing, and because the security didn't know what they were doing, which were immigrants, they just dropped her, completely winded her. She's out unconscious on the floor. And I don't know if you're going to say it's a lack of training, it's a lack of this, it's a lack of the other. But when you've got programs for people to come across to work something as serious as security at a festival or a concert or
Ryan, but what are you inferring from that incident about the sort of broader issue here?
I think the broader issue is that immigration goes deeper than just like an area, like a physical area, a community of your town and that sort of thing. It goes into communities like the rock community, pride community, whatever community it is, you know, it's there. And
what is it doing? What is it doing when you say it's causing problems? What is it doing to those communities?
So for me, again, I don't feel safe going to gigs anymore.
Why?
Because when I went to Download, like I say, it's this, all of the security is pretty much immigration.
Right, but why does that make you feel unsafe?
Because there's a absolute language barrier. They didn't understand anything I was saying to them. I had to go and find, and it sounds awful to say, and I really hate saying it, I had to go and find a white English-speaking security guard to find out where the medical tent was for an issue that had happened with a friend.
If they'd spoken English, would you have felt safe then?
If they actually knew what they were doing and actually cared, rather than just sitting on the phone and just looked at you and went, ugh. You know, and actually trying to.
All right, but that's not about immigration. There will be British people in jobs who are doing that as well. But you're saying the language barrier is a key thing for you.
Absolutely. It's something as serious as that. When somebody's having a full blown panic attack, can't breathe, needs an inhaler, and you're trying to get through to somebody that just
doesn't understand what you're saying. It's like, help, like, where's the tent?
Sure.
We don't know.
More broadly, if you can't speak, if you cannot communicate with somebody because you literally, they can't understand you and you can't understand them, put aside the sort of the urgency, the emergency, the situation that you're telling me about, Ryan, that is going to have an impact on people's relationships and people's communities. Because to have a community, you need to be able, as a very, very basic thing, to speak to each other.
Absolutely. And I'm not saying that, you know, immigration is bad. That's not what I'm saying. Everybody deserves a chance to have a job. Everybody deserves a chance at a better life or whatever it is that they're coming across for. But for something as serious as that, you know, a security job where you're dropping people at the barriers because you just don't know what you're doing and you're getting shouted at by other staff members to say, help, you know, pick them up. I mean, there's a video that went viral online that you've got security guards that stood there at the front and they're just watching people fall, like, on the backs, on the necks, on the heads.
What about Daniel's point, Ryan, that he and perhaps the people that you're describing are coming here to do these jobs because not enough British people want to do them, only to then get demonised and told they're not doing them properly or they need to speak English better and so on?
Is it because British people don't want to do them, or is it because it's cheaper to get labour from elsewhere?
Well, it's a bit of both. It's a bit of both. But a lot of the jobs that Daniel was talking about, there is a skilled shortage list. Because we've tried to find people to do a lot of the jobs that need doing, and hospitality and farms and lorry drivers and so on, and there weren't enough people to do them. And I get why, if you're one of the people that's come here to prop up our economy with your hard work and your graft, and you're constantly being told, not thank you, but you're destroying everything that's good about this country and you're ruining our cohesion and our communities, you might find that not just difficult to hear, but actively quite hurtful and unwelcoming. I hear your point, Ryan, completely, though, about language. There are too many people in this country, I think, that don't speak English, partly in some cases because they haven't made the effort to, partly because the government and consecutive governments haven't done enough to support them and help them to. Thank you, Ryan. Lots more calls to come on this in just a moment. Has immigration really destroyed our communities and our cohesion? 03456060973. 2/3 of people, according to a poll today, think it has. But what about you? More of your calls on that to come. Plus,
so we're going to have to look, and I'm going to reduce that 50 days that I gave them to a lesser number, because I think I already know the answer what's going to happen.
Talks between Keir Starmer and Donald Trump in Scotland today, culminating in that warning from the US president to Vladimir Putin. But will this actually change anything at all? Get the latest from Washington, D.C. straight after the news headlines at 10:31 with Darrell Jackson.
Sir Keir Starmer and Donald Trump have agreed urgent action must be taken to end suffering in Gaza, with the US president saying real starvation is happening there. The two leaders are in Aberdeen for a private dinner following talks in South Ayrshire. Two men have been killed and a third's in a life-threatening condition after being stabbed in South London. They were among four people attacked at a business in Southwark this afternoon. A suspect who's been detained is in hospital. The Lionesses have been celebrating their Euros win at an outdoor reception in the garden behind 10 Downing Street. The players and staff were hosted by the Deputy Prime Minister, Angela Rayner. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain moving into western areas tonight, a low of 9 degrees.
LBC, Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Tomorrow morning with Nick Ferrari at breakfast, Donald Trump tells Keir Starmer that cutting immigration is the way to beat Nigel Farage. Is he right? Plus, today marks a year since the Southport stabbings that led to nationwide riots. And how easy is it for children to bypass the government's online safety rules? Nick will speak with Technology Secretary Peter Kyle. All that and more coming up with Nick Ferrari at breakfast tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock, here on LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Listen on your radio and on Global Player. LBC.
The people of Britain love their ice baths. They've bought loads of them. With the Barclaycard Platinum, they could also save with 0% interest for up to 24 months on purchases, which is a nice, warm feeling. What you buy is your business. Helping you pay less interest is ours. Subject to financial status, T's and C's and exclusions apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable and 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
Searching for a holiday? Here's an idea. Don't type cheap flights to wherever into your browser. You know you do it. Search Kayak instead. Let us do the finding for you. all the great flight deals from hundreds of travel sites all in one place. Go on, do it, do it. Listen to the waves. They're calling your name. Not literally, obviously, unless your name is Kayak. Kayak! You're thinking about it, aren't you? Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
I'd been in the family home for 30 years, but it was different. Too many rooms, too few voices. Moving to McCarthy Stone felt like a big step, but this place is full of life. I chat to someone every day. In the lounge, in the garden, even in the lift. I have my own apartment, but I'm never truly alone. I only wish I'd done it sooner.
Discover stunning retirement apartments exclusively for the over 55. Search McCarthy Stone or call 0800 153 3055. Age restrictions and qualifying criteria apply.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
At 10:34, this is interesting from Chris in Gloucester, who says this. Ben, where my parents live, there are very few immigrants and still nobody speaks to each other. There was a sense of community where my dad grew up in the 60s, but there are loads of areas like this now. I blame social media and COVID, Chris says. Immigrants are just scapegoats. How people believe this rubbish is beyond me. I'm in a small block of flats full of Brits and still nobody speaks. Interesting, isn't it? Because even if we accept that, yes, there has been, what are we going to call it, breakdown in community or tears in the social fabric or a loss of cohesion, which I think there has been. I see it. You see it, don't you? It's there. It's a big step between saying, yes, it's happening, and saying, OK, it's happening, it's the fault of the migrants. Chris is saying it's more about COVID, it's about social media, it's about the way the world has changed. I would say it's about this increasingly kind of individualistic culture that we live in. It's easy, isn't it, to say, well, it must be immigrants. That's happening, so that must be why it's happening. You put two and two together, and you basically get blame the foreigners. Is Chris right to say, yes, the problem's real, but the cause is not what two-thirds of people seem to think it is. The cause is not immigration. It's more complex than that. 0345 6060973. Do you think your area has lost its cohesion, has lost its community? And if it has, do you blame migration, mass migration? Or do you think Chris is right to say, actually, it's not that, it's something else? Come back to your calls on that in just a moment. First, though, we played that clip earlier in the programme of Donald Trump speaking about immigration, another warning to Europe. Get your act together, he said, or Europe will cease to exist. That came after he met with Keir Starmer at his Turnberry golf course in Scotland for a series of talks on all sorts of things, including the war in Ukraine. Donald Trump bringing forward the deadline he'd set Vladimir Putin to agree a ceasefire deal in Ukraine. He's now giving him just 10 or 12 days. Why? Because he doesn't think there's any point waiting, because he doesn't think Putin will agree to it, which most of us, I think, probably could have told him about 6 months ago. Let's talk about all of that with Daniel Lipman, White House correspondent for Politico. Daniel, great to have us on the programme tonight. This sort of latest warning, this latest threat, if you can call it that, from Trump to Putin, is it going to change anything?
Likely not, because Putin doesn't really respond to these types of threats. Trump has kind of been using this 2-week deadline for many different aspects in his second term, where he says he wants Congress to do something in 2 weeks, and 2 weeks they're going to decide what to do about tariffs. And so this is, you know, he does have a pretty short attention span. So in 2 weeks, he may not be as focused on Ukraine and Russia right now. And this bill that is in Congress has some major issues in terms of secondary sanctions. Trump doesn't want to have the U.S. get in a trade war with China more than it already is.
So when that deadline expires, Daniel, the 10, the 12 days, whatever it might be, and perhaps tariffs come into play and so on, I mean, is it going to change anything in your view in terms of the situation in Ukraine? Is it really going to put any real pressure on Vladimir Putin, or is it all just posturing?
It seems like this is every day is a part of the Trump show, a new episode of his presidency. And so he thinks in terms of what will create news. I guess he decided 50 days was too long. But remember, in that sanctions bill, it gives some latitude to the executive branch. And so if he finds it not in the American interest to impose some sanctions, he does have some wiggle room. So it's not automatic secondary sanctions on places like India and China that are still trading with Russia.
Well, on that topic, let me ask you about the sort of relationship, that the unlikely alliance that we've seen develop between Keir Starmer and Donald Trump, because defying all the odds, I think, they actually seem to get on quite well. Donald Trump seems to quite like our prime minister.
He seems to really kind of enjoy his company. He finds him likable and feels like he can do business with him. And that's Trump is a businessman. And so he thinks in terms of what they can do in terms of deals. The U.S. and the U.K. Were first out of the gate in terms of a trade deal a month or two ago. And so I think that he doesn't like to be lectured. And that's what he felt like with Justin Trudeau. He didn't want to see someone who was pompous. And so I think that a lot of these world leaders, they have to kind of appeal to, this is not a normal president. They have to appeal to Trump's vanity, but also stick up for their interests. And he doesn't like pushovers either. But he is also someone who likes what the NATO Secretary General did in terms of texting him, saying, "You know, you're doing such a historic job in terms of getting Europeans to pay for extra military spending."
Flattery will really get you everywhere, Donald Trump. Thank you, Daniel. Daniel Lipman, White House correspondent for Politico. 10:40 is the time. You're listening to Ben Kentish here on LBC, where we're talking about a new poll today that finds that two-thirds of British people, including a majority of Labour voters and half of Green Party voters even, are now of the view that immigration, mass migration to this country in the last 20 years or so, is destroying our communities and our cohesion. Is that actually happening? Is that happening where you are? If it is, pick up the phone, 0345 6060 973, or, as we've been hearing from some of our callers and guests, is it just too easy to scapegoat migrants in that way? Karen's on the line tonight in Coventry. Evening to you, Karen.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for taking my call. Hope you're well.
I'm very well, sir. Thank you. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you. I don't really know, Ben, how to feel about this poll, and I'll explain why. So I don't view myself as a migrant because I was born in the UK, but I am of sort of Indian origin. My dad was born in the UK, so we're of Indian origin. And throughout my life in the UK, I've never faced any form of discrimination. I've never felt like I'm treated different by people within my community. I feel so privileged that, you know, my parents have brought me up in this amazing country that is the UK, or, well, a collection of countries, but, you know, you know, I feel so privileged to just be living here. You know, the amount of respect that I've always received from every member of the community that I've ever come across. I think the only time where I felt a little bit worried was maybe last summer when the, you know, incident in Southport happened and there was sort of a lot of riots and things going on. And that's despite living in, you know, a really, really sort of nice and fairly affluent part of the city. So there's not really too much problems where I live in terms of, you know, people misbehaving, etc. But I think the reason why, you know, I've not had a negative experience is because my parents have always taught me one value, and that is to integrate and align with British values. So
what does that mean, Karen?
That for me means... For me, what that means is that even though we're Indian, so we have preserved elements of our culture, sort of, you know, at home, etc. You know, occasionally we might talk in our own sort of language, but generally, a lot of the times when we do speak, it's in English. It means to respect your community, you know, align with their values, and don't try and, you know, be rigid in the way. So you have to, how shall I explain it? You have to integrate, you know, you have to make the people within your community feel as if, you know what, you're respecting their values, because ultimately, you know, I might have been born in the UK, but obviously I am of Indian origin. So I can't, you know, I have to, for example, when we're out and about, I have to ensure that, we're speaking English, so maybe the people around us can, understand what we're saying. Because sometimes, you might even just be in a grocery store and say, you revert to speaking in, say, your own language, etc. Sometimes maybe the people around you might feel a little bit uncomfortable.
Is that understandable, or is that just xenophobic and racist if people hear a foreign language and they don't like that?
No, not necessarily. I think everything has to be in balance. So I think you have to really respect the people around you. Sure. Preserve elements of your own culture and identity and embrace that, but also embrace where you're living. My parents even, sent me to a Catholic private school because they really wanted me to sort of learn about, the culture and the religion, and they wanted me to, that's sort of primarily followed in the UK and respect it, and respect all of my members in the community. And I think some of your callers raised a very valuable and pertinent point. Sometimes people might get a little bit put off if people, when they do move over to the UK, they're very rigid. So they're not, maybe, I'm not saying everybody will do this, but say if you are somebody that's moved over to the UK and, you might come across as a little bit dismissive of what are British values, and you're not sort of necessarily making an effort to integrate.
Is that what's going on, Karen, in your view, that too many people who are coming here today, mm-hmm. or have come recently, aren't doing what you and your family did?
It's difficult for me to comment on that because I don't really know. I mean, I think, for me, it's all about, being proud of where you live. And, I do view my, like, even though I'm someone of Indian origin, I was born in the UK. I've lived here my whole life. I've only been, for example, to India on holiday. I do see myself as British, and I try and really align myself with the culture, the values there, and just respecting everybody around me. And I think it has to be a joint effort. So I think it has to be an effort of people that are moving over to the UK to try and learn the culture, embrace it, be a part of it, but then also an element of the government as well. So, creating those jobs that some of your callers talked about previously, because then I think if people contribute and, they contribute to society in a positive way, then, yeah, people would, I think most people are pretty reasonable. Most people are, I think the UK is such an amazing place to live. I'll give you an example of why I say that. So during Ramadan, so I'm a Muslim, so I fast during Ramadan, and I went to I live near a university. I won't say exactly where, but I live near a university, and yeah. I would go to the, so to break my fast every evening, I would go to the mosque on the campus, because it's just a bit easier. It's just a little bit
more convenient. Karen, I'm so sorry, but just give us the gist, if you would, of the example.
Yeah, so I remember I came across somebody who has just come from France to study for a year to do a master's. And he said that, it's like, how should I say it? He said, when I realized that there's a mosque on campus, he said, I found this, like, really an amazing thing, because he said, in France, we don't have this.
This is why
I think the UK is such an amazing place.
Because we do, we accept that diversity, and to an extent we celebrate it. But we also want people to integrate in the way that you've done, Karen. I hear you completely. What a great call. Thank you very much indeed for calling in. Karen, in Coventry, lots of positive and messages coming in, lots of agreement coming in with Karen. Lots more of your calls to come on immigration. Is it really destroying our communities? Can we really blame Karen and his family for what's going wrong in this country? Straight after this.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. The dancing stopped and the horror began. Three innocent girls were murdered at a Taylor Swift dance class 12 months ago tomorrow. Failed by the glaringly incompetent Prevent Counterterrorism Programme.
There are grave questions about how this network of agencies failed to identify and act on the risks.
The killer also ordered a deadly weapon with ease.
He was easily able to order a knife. That's a total disgrace.
12 months on, I'll be asking, Southport, can we be assured it could never happen again? Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow. Tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear All Change Please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Neuromol Dual Action contains the power of ibuprofen
and the strength of paracetamol
combined together to provide faster, longer-lasting, more effective relief than regular painkillers alone. Hit pain hard
with Neuromol Dual Action Pain Relief.
Contains ibuprofen and paracetamol for pain not relieved by regular painkillers, ibuprofen or paracetamol individually.
Always read the label. Lion!
Do you like the sound of work that has plenty of giggles? Where you'll build lifelong skills, as well as wobbly towers, where you'll feel part of a team, or even have the chance to lead one, where every little thing you do makes a big difference.
Superstar, you did it!
Do something big. Work with small children. Search Early Years Careers to find out more.
Oh, bad traffic. Great news, isn't it? More time in the car. Joy. Maybe you don't feel it. Maybe you don't drive a Lexus NX yet. But when you do, you'll see the positive of peak hour, the delight in a detour, the love of the long way. The Lexus NX plug-in hybrid. Experience amazing before you arrive.
This is LBC. Message Ben Kentish on WhatsApp now on 0345 60
60973. It's 10:50. Peter, come to your call in a moment. Layla too. Thank you for waiting on the line. Keep your calls coming in 0345 60 60973. You know this by now, don't you? Is the number. Let's have a quick look at tomorrow's newspaper front pages, though. First of all, dominated by that meeting in Scotland between Trump and Starmer today. The Times leads on Donald Trump saying, cut tax to beat Farage. President's political lesson for Starmer. Put money in people's pockets and get tough on small boats. The Daily Mail, the same line. Trump tells Starmer how to see off Farage. Slightly different angle on the front of The Guardian. They turn to the Middle East. Trump urges Israel to let food aid into Gaza to tackle what he called real starvation. Daily Express returns to his advice to our Prime Minister. Trump's pretty simple advice to PM. The Daily Mirror, for my brother, is their headline. Siblings' bravery amid the unimaginable pain at graduation ceremonies for Nottingham victims. This is the graduation ceremonies that were held yesterday, or would have been held yesterday, for Barnaby Webber and Grace O'Malley Kumar, who of course were killed in that awful attack. The I newspaper returns to Trump. You can't fake that starvation. Trump and UK send new Gaza warning to Israel. And last but not least, the Daily Telegraph, the same story. Trump cut taxes and stop the boats. 10:52 time. Back to your calls on immigration. One of the topics Donald Trump talking out on today. Is he right to say that Europe is disappearing before our eyes? Are two-thirds of people in this country right to say that immigration is destroying our communities? Or is it too easy to scapegoat migrants for that? Let's talk to Peter in Manchester about all that. Hi, Peter.
Oh, hi, Ben. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, sir. Thank you. You are an immigrant yourself.
Yes, I'm an immigrant myself. I'm Romanian. So, I've been living in this country for like 15 years now. And as your previous caller mentioned, I think this country has been very welcoming to me. It's been a great country. I mean, I don't have anything to say against it. And it really hurts me when I hear other people complaining about the country and complaining that they don't have or anything or that they feel discriminated in a way or another. I haven't seen in 15 years, I haven't been once discriminated in this country. And if you're a good man, people will treat you in a good way. So. There's definitely not a problem with that.
But
regarding the immigration, yes, I do think immigration, or unfettered immigration, uncontrolled immigration, is an issue because there's so many people that simply, even if they want to integrate, they simply don't have the time to integrate. So even if they are well-intended, they don't have the means to integrate, they don't have the time to integrate, they don't have a lot of other things that allow them to, they don't feel encouraged to integrate as well. So if they come here, a lot of people tell them, oh, you don't have to integrate, don't worry about it. You don't have to adapt to our way of living.
Who's telling them that?
I would say that a lot of political commentators, a lot of media, a lot of mostly on the left side of politics, they think that it's a virtue to have like a huge amount of cultures. Yeah, it's fine to have your own culture, of course, but the primary culture is this country's culture. So we have to respect it. We have to adapt to it.
And you don't think enough migrants are doing that?
Some are, but a lot of them aren't. So that's going to cause a friction there.
So would you agree, Peter, as an immigrant, with the two-thirds of people in this country that think that immigration is destroying our cohesion?
I do agree, yeah. The cohesion, the social cohesion is very important. So we're losing that.
And as an immigrant, you think that is part of the cause?
Part of it, yes, I would say so.
Fascinating. Peter, thank you very, very much indeed. I get in some parts of the country that is going on. I've got to say my experience in a very diverse part of London, we've got a road WhatsApp group full of people, every colour under the sun, every nationality you can think of. Albanian guy came to fix our tap the other day because it was leaking. It must be dozens of nationalities on our road alone. And it works. It works. And there is a sense of community and there is a sense of neighbourliness. Not as much as it might be, but there is. But I'm also aware that I've got friends in other parts of the country and it's a very, very different story. You don't get that. So it does depend where you live, I think. Thank you, Peter. David's calling from Macclesfield to talk more about this. David, has Macclesfield been destroyed by mass migration? Evening.
Not yet. It's coming.
Go on.
Listen, I don't know where to start this conversation. There's so much to unpick. So I'll try and make it as brief as possible, but look, before I tell you about my experience abroad in a different country, let me just say, if you go onto the UK government.uk website about travelling abroad, it tells you things like observe the culture, don't tap people on the head, even in a friendly gesture, don't point your toes, don't put your feet up in front of somebody. It tells you about all these little points. Well, you know, I mean, look, I mean, going about that, that's how you respect other people's culture, even if you're only there for a couple of weeks. Now, if you're going to land completely in a country and completely change your life and intend to live there and sort of become a citizen and claim benefits and everything else, then that means that you've got to earn the respect even further. So by earning that respect and integrating at least partially with the local population and observing their cultures and so on and so on, then at least, even if it's just a show of that niceness and that kindness.
But we've had Karen talking about the fact that he and his family did that, David. We just had Peter talking about his determination successfully to integrate in this country.
Yeah.
You're saying not enough migrants are doing what those two guys are doing?
Well, there's a substantial amount doing exactly the opposite. You know, there's some there who claim that they're coming here to eventually rule the country.
Not many immigrants are saying they're coming here to rule Britain.
No, it might be quiet at the moment, but it's kind of veiled. But let's not go into that. That's a different subject.
I've got to go into it, though, because it's not true. I mean, how many immigrants do we know that have come here and said, I am going to take over this country? Not many. David, thank you for the call. Let's talk to Kyundan in Canterbury. Hi, Kyundan.
Hi, good evening. So evening. I was born in India, but made in England. So I say that to everybody because I made my life in England. And unlike most people who were born British, I chose to give up my Indian citizenship and become British. It was a conscious choice to, you know, put my oath of allegiance for Queen and country at the time. Now, I strongly believe the country is going to the gutters given the kind of unfettered immigration we are seeing from people who simply do not share the same values as the rest of this country. If you come here, it is your moral obligation to become British if you want to live in this society. Unless, obviously, you want to come here for a short period of time and then, you know, you want to go back to your home country, which is fine. But if you want to come here and live here for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and I've have been in this country for over 15 years. I came as a highly skilled immigrant at one time with a white-collar job. My wife and I, we made conscious attempts to integrate, to consciously attend meetings, to consciously go and become part of the fabric of the society. Yeah. It is upon you. It is yours.
Right.
The onus is on you as an immigrant to make that happen.
But what makes you think, Kyneton, that the immigrants today aren't doing what you did?
Well, sir, this isn't a sweeping catch-all for all immigrants. I guess there is a fundamental difference between people who are coming here who just want all the good bits about Britain but do not care about the rest. I mean, if you want to create a parallel society where you're going to have Sharia courts, where you're going to have people wearing face coverings and body coverings, things that are not part of our local society, people are going to live in ghettos that are where you will not integrate. And when I say integration, these are subtle things. You live in your own little your own little well. You're a frog in a well that you do not see what's going on around you. How many people are actually going and attending Christmas fairs, for example, or visiting pantomimes? I mean, these are fantastic places to get to understand the British culture.
But you don't most have people to attend don't. A pantomime to enter
no,
into
I'm
a
I'm just
country.
Making giving you an example here. So this is there can be plenty of other things. You can go and do a Sabbath if you're Jewish, or you can come and celebrate Diwali in the British fashion. That isn't the point. The point is people have to make a conscious attempt. If you want to become British, if you want to become fabric and part of this country, you must. The onus is on you as an immigrant to make sure that you put in 100% of your effort, 200% of your effort to become British. Because it is for the rest of the people who were born in Britain, it comes naturally. For people who like me who've come from abroad, I came from India, for us it is a privilege to become British.
Kyneton, got to leave it there. I'm out of time on that conversation, but thank you very, very much. A lot of immigrants getting in touch, a lot of first, second generation immigrants. You heard them saying there is a problem, that a lot of people coming here today aren't integrating in the same way. A topic I'm sure we will return to. Not just yet, though, because I want to get your thoughts on other matters, particularly in the next hour. Jeremy Corbyn, the new party, and why it's doing so well in particular amongst young people. If you are a young person yourself, tell us, what is Jeremy Corbyn offering that young people like so much and that other parties seemingly aren't offering at the same time? 0345 606 0973. Talk lots more about that and why Nigel Farage is doing well amongst the young as well, just after the news. It's 11 o'clock.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Donald Trump has talked about real starvation in Gaza and says America will help set up food centres. He's been meeting with Sir Keir Starmer at one of his golf courses in Scotland, with the two leaders under pressure to get more aid into the Strip. Well, meanwhile, the US president's also threatened to cut short a 50-day deadline for President Putin to reach an agreement with Ukraine. Daniel Lipman, White House correspondent for Politico, has told LBC this evening that's unlikely to change anything.
Putin doesn't really respond to these types of threats. Trump has kind of been using this two-week deadline for many different aspects in his second term, where he says he wants Congress to do something in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, they're going to decide what to do about tariffs. And so he does have a pretty short attention span. So in 2 weeks, he may not be as focused on Ukraine and Russia.
A man's been detained over a stabbing which left two others dead and a third seriously injured. All four were found with knife wounds at a business premises in the Southwark area of central London at lunchtime. The suspects in hospital with life-threatening injuries, detectives are ruling out the terrorism motive. A couple from Cardiff who planned the rape of young children have both been jailed. Stuart Compton got life and Tracy Turner was given 12 years for exchanging tens of thousands of images fantasising about abusing two girls and a boy. Here's Detective Inspector David Butt.
Offenders like Turner and Compton believe they can hide behind phone screens, but this is clearly not the case. The successful conviction of these two dangerous, high-risk sexual predators will ensure the children are protected.
Pharmacy leaders have warned the booming demand for weight loss jabs may be unsustainable, and industry bodies call for supplies to be carefully managed to ensure they benefit those most in need. And England's Lionesses have been at Downing Street this evening for a reception to honour their double success at the Euros. They were hosted by the Deputy PM, Angela Rayner. LBC's Benji Hire was there earlier and watched them arrive.
They were greeted at number 10 by England flags that had been draped in the windows of the building, and there was a hero's welcome outside. Ecstatic crowds gathered at the gates of Downing Street, cheering and singing Sweet Caroline as the ladies got off the bus.
LBC weather, outbreaks of rain moving into western areas tonight, lows of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
Is the time. Ben Kentish here with you on LBC. Very good evening to you for just joining us on the programme. Remember this. The height of Corbyn mania back in 2018, the then Labour leader cheered by tens and tens of thousands of revellers at the Glastonbury Music Festival, as it seemed he might be on course to become our next Prime Minister. Of course, it didn't turn out that way. And yet, we cannot escape the fact that at that point, in that moment, Jeremy Corbyn captured the imagination and the minds and the support of, I won't say an entire generation, but quite a lot of it. And it might not stop there. Corbyn mania might be about to make a stunning resurgence. You will have seen the news, of course you will, last week, that Jeremy Corbyn and former Labour MP Zara Sultana are launching a new party. Your party, they're calling it for now, although that won't be the long-term name. And the success it's had in the short term is quite astonishing. Hundreds of thousands of people reportedly having signed up, over 200,000 to be precise, and that was just in 24 hours. Plus, pollsters finding that young people in particular are very, very excited about the idea of a Jeremy Corbyn and Zara Sultana-led party. Fast forward to today, and yet another survey finding that Corbyn himself, despite having been rejected by the British people in two general elections, despite having led a party that was found to have done a pretty atrocious job of responding to anti-Jewish hatred in its midst, is far more popular still today among young voters than Keir Starmer is. Far, far, far more popular indeed. What explains that? What is Jeremy Corbyn and his new party perhaps offering young people that others aren't? How do you explain the fact that amongst 18 to 24-year-olds in particular, Jeremy Corbyn has an approval rating of plus 18, while Keir Starmer has one of minus 30? What is Corbyn offering the young that so many young people seem to like? If you've got thoughts on that, if you've got theories on that, you've got speculation about that, you know what to do. Pick up the phone, 0345 60 60 973, the number that you need. There is a tendency sometimes when we talk about these sorts of issues about young people, for lots of people, no disrespect at all, but lots of people in their 60s and 70s to get in touch and tell me exactly what's going on with people who are aged 18 to 24, which is fine. But it does go without saying that if you are a little bit closer to that age range, if you are yourself, let's say, I don't know, under the age of 35, and you can help us understand why Jeremy Corbyn, despite everything that went on in the last decade or so, despite the fact that many people in his own party blamed him for not doing enough to stop Brexit, despite the anti-Semitism stuff, all the rest of it, is still so popular amongst young people in particular in a way that he isn't amongst older generations, tell me what is going on. 0345 60 60 973. There's another curious element to this, which is that when you ask young people who they are most likely to vote for, the main parties, the mainstream parties, Labour and the Tories, do really badly. Young people being split, it seems, particularly towards the extremes, I would say. the extremes of British politics, because it's not just Jeremy Corbyn on the kind of far left that they like the sound of. More and more of them also like Nigel Farage on what you might call the hard right. So why are young people in particular being driven to Corbyn at one extreme? And I use that word loosely. I'm not saying Corbyn's an extremist, but it's not, you know, it's not the centre ground. It's not mainstream. In one way to the sort of the hard left, if you call it that, and in another way to the hard right. Is it just because the mainstream has failed young people? Or is there something here about Gaza, perhaps, and the Middle East, and the fact that a lot of young people feel that for them that is a really, really important, significant issue in how they'll vote, and Corbyn is offering a different stance on it? He's put that issue very much front and centre of the first days of this new party. Is it about Gaza? Is it about the failure, as I see it at least, of Labour and the Tories to address year after year, decade after decade even, the needs of young people? Is it something else? Why is Corbyn so popular amongst young people in particular? Give me a call, 0345 6060 973. And what is he offering? What is he peddling, maybe, that they seem to like so much? Come to your calls on that very, very shortly. Let's talk to Morgan Jones first, journalist who covers the Labour movement, co-editor of the Labour-aligned journal Renewal, who wrote the article A Day Out with Jeremy Corbyn's New Party. Morgan, great to have you with us on the show tonight. Does it surprise you that Corbyn is still so popular amongst young voters?
To be honest, not really. Jeremy Corbyn has always had he has always inspired real meaningful affection and real meaningful political support. I'm interested that you talk so much about young voters, because the stat that's always stuck out to me was that people who joined the Labour Party because of Jeremy Corbyn in 2015 the average age was 51. So it's, you know, there is a large number of people out there in the UK who just like Jeremy Corbyn. The crucial thing, however, has always been that a large number of people liking you is not the same as meaningful majority strategy to win elections, particularly in the first past the post system. And you know, you saw in 2017 and 2019 the majorities for Labour under Corbyn in some sort of like core, I don't know, Labour heartlands in Bristol, in London, shoot through the roof, incredibly high majorities that then went, you know, right back down again. And so, yeah, it's not particularly surprising to me that Jeremy Corbyn, a man with an extraordinary media profile for someone who's fundamentally just an independent MP,
he's not popular today, at least, amongst older people. His approval rating amongst everybody, all voters, minus 39. Keir Starmer's minus 40, so basically the same. So minus 39 amongst all age groups, but plus 18 amongst 18 to 24. So he is far, far, far more popular, disproportionately more popular amongst young people. Why do you think that is?
I mean, I think we have an unrepresentative electorate. Young people don't vote, don't get their voices heard, and so the political system doesn't serve their desires, their interests in the way it serves the interests of people who very reliably vote, which is older people. Mm. I think there is also, as you mentioned in the intro there, definitely you need to talk about Gaza in this. You need to talk about how, I would say, young people particularly feel incredibly horrified by what's been going on, and feel that horror again has not been answered by the political class, whether that's right or wrong.
And you've been covering the sort of the birth, the nascent days of this new party. What have you made of it so far? Because the original launch was a bit shambolic. Zara Sultana said she was co-leading with Jeremy Corbyn. Then Jeremy Corbyn says, no, you're not. And then they came up with a name that's not going to be the name. Is it shambolic, or actually you've been quite impressed, maybe?
I would say it has been pretty shambolic, but that doesn't mean that the end product will not be what they want it to be, I think. I was, as you mentioned, I wrote an article about going to an event with Corbyn and with Andrew Feinstein, who stood an independent who stood against Starmer, and with Leanne Mohammed, again, an independent who stood and came very close to beating Wes Streeting the election last year. They have they have a place in, they have a vacuum to fill. There is a space to the left of Labour that I think they can occupy. And I think that while their party, the launch of your party, what I was interested to read in the New Statesman earlier, that Andrew Murray, who was a Corbyn advisor, was wrote this whole article about it, in which he referred to it as CSP, Corbyn Soltan Party, because, you know, it's very unclear what it's going to be called and what it's going to be in a kind of structural level. But beyond the kind of structural level, I think politically it's quite clear that there is an appetite for the ideas they are proffering. There is a demographic that wants to vote for them. And so I think on one hand, it seems, you know, the future is unknowable. The next election is a very long time away. But it strikes me that this sort of messy Twitter statement, contradicted reporting in the Times, birth of this new party, whatever it transpires to be, will be more of a footnote than a sort of, like, I don't know, abortive.
You think they could go on and actually be quite successful, Morgan?
Yes. I mean, I really want to caveat that when I say quite successful, I don't mean that I think Jeremy Corbyn is going to be the Prime Minister.
They could win quite a few seats and they could be a real political force.
Yeah, I think that they can, you know, Leanne Mohammed came within 528 votes of unseating Wes Streeting. I think that they will put a lot more effort into that seat. They will put a lot more effort into other seats where there is this appetite. And yeah, I think they could be a real political force and a real pain for Labour, particularly coupled with, we are quite likely to see Zach Polanski elected leader of the Green Party. He is kind of doing quite a similar thing, this sort of eco-populism thing to the left of Labour. And he has been overtly, let's see if that lasts, quite welcoming the idea that, you know, the more the merrier in this fight.
This sort of left-wing coalition potentially taking on the Labour Party. And yet, when it comes to young people, Morgan, it's not just the kind of left-wing alternative that seems to be quite popular. Nigel Farage, also really, really growing in support amongst young voters as well. Do you understand that? Does that make sense to you?
I mean, look, I cover the Labour Party, not Reform, so I don't claim any particular expertise here. One thing that I have been very interested in covering politics generally is the just the sort of catatonic lack of trust in the political system. People hate politicians. You know, you go out, you knock doors, you talk to people, and they, you know, they're all the same. They're all in it for themselves. They're all corrupt. It's all understood. Yeah, people understand things through a lens of corruption really frequently. And I think that Farage and Reform really feed on that attitude and the prevalence of that attitude and this kind of nihilistic attitude about politics. You know, nothing's going to change, so might as well, like, give it a go.
Try something different.
Yeah.
Yep. Really interesting. Thank you, Morgan, for coming on and talking to us. Morgan Jones, journalist, who, as she just said, covers the Labour movement and co-eds the Labour-aligned journal Renewal. Simple question, really. Why do young people seem to love Jeremy Corbyn? 0345 6060 973. What is he and this new party offering young people in particular that so many of them seem to like that Labour and the Conservatives aren't? If you've got thoughts on that, if you're maybe one of the young people that would be very keen, very excited even, at the idea of voting for Corbyn once again, give me a ring on that number. Your call's to come straight after this, 1116.
This is LBC.
At SSE Energy Solutions, we know businesses are full of different kinds of energy.
Like your fourth coffee of the morning energy.
Your yes, chef energy. And even, as per my last email, energy. You can bring any energy you like to your business, but at SSE Energy Solutions, we bring simple, affordable energy. Choose SSE Energy Solutions, a different kind of energy.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 5% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that dream holiday or a weekend getaway. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.89% gross. Terms apply.
Kate's just off to work after sleeping in the best bed in the business. And my word, doesn't she look ready for anything? Something about her smile is just brighter. Her eyes seem glintier. and she just feels so much more Katie-er. Of course, it's no surprise, really, because last night she slept at Premier Inn, and she got up to 15% off with Business Booker. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. T's and C's apply.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345-6060-973.
11:18 is the time. I've got to say, I agree with Morgan. I was lying on a beach in Greece last week, watching the news, as I do, because I'm sad like that. And this new party, as soon as I saw the announcement, as soon as I saw the detail, I thought, this could really, really make a difference here. This could really pick up millions of votes, of young people in particular. Why? Because honestly, hand on heart, if you are under the age of, I don't know, 40 right now, why would you vote for the Conservatives? I mean, if you've got an answer to that, do please tell me why on earth anyone under the age of about 60 would vote Conservative right now. But Labour as well. Is Labour doing enough for young people? Is Labour talking to young people, boasting about maintaining the triple lot while they drive up tuition fees? Nobody is. None of the main parties, or should I say, neither of the main parties has anything significant to offer young people at the moment. And any party that does, any party that starts talking to them in the way that Corbyn is and Farage is going to tap into a groundswell of anger and dissatisfaction and frustration in a way that could be absolutely defining come the next election, in my view. What about you? 0345 6060 973. That's my answer to why Jeremy Corbyn's so popular amongst your young people. But let me come to yours, more importantly. Let's talk to Matt in High Wycombe about all this. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Ben. Great show as usual.
Thank you, sir.
I think, I mean, you've just touched on it. Many of previous governments going back a long time have neglected the youth. You know, partly, I would say, it's their own fault in a way. Many of them don't vote. Well, if you don't vote, no one's going to do anything for you. That's how politics works.
It's a cycle, though, Matt, isn't it? Because young people don't vote, so politicians ignore them.
Yeah.
But then young people get more and more disillusioned with politics, or Westminster politics at least, because they just think that nobody's talking to them because, let's get real, they aren't. And it just becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I agree, but you break that cycle by going out and voting. That's how you break the cycle. What I think that Corbyn is offering the youth is, I think they see it as him offering them a future, whereas the other parties don't. That's quite an obvious statement. And I think the way they're seeing it is he will tackle the massive wealth disparity in this country. I think people thought that the Labour government coming in were going to make inroads. Well, they're clearly not. Conservatives never will. Farage won't. He'll talk, but, you know, he won't. And so I think that they can see that one of the biggest problems in this country it's not migration or, you know, immigration. It's wealth disparity. I think the quote, and it's been quoted quite a few times on LBC lately, I think it's that the top richest 50 families in this country own 50% of the entire wealth, which is the equivalent of 35 million of the rest of us. You know, we live in a capitalist society. That's fine. But the clue in the word capitalism is the word capital. If none of that capital flows down, the system fails. And that's why our system is failing.
All right, Matt, I get why anybody promising to change that and level the playing field a bit would be popular. But he isn't popular. Jeremy Corbyn is not popular at all. He's almost basically as unpopular as Keir Starmer, which is very unpopular, by the way, amongst everybody. But young people in particular see something in him that the rest of the country doesn't.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is. I mean, was it 2018? You know, Labour lost because of Corbyn, didn't they? Really?
But this is it. So what is it amongst young people, 18 to 24-year-olds in particular, that is so different that they love a man that the rest of the country has got no time at all for?
Well, that's what I think it is. I think that, you know, he... they think that he will tackle the wealth disparity.
But don't adults want that as well?
Too many billionaires and too many food banks, basically.
But adults care about that stuff. Adults care about food banks. Adults want there to be a more equal society. And yet they don't think that Jeremy Corbyn is the one to bring it about. And young people do.
Well, maybe the elder generation think that Corbyn won't do it, whereas the young think he will do it. Maybe they're wrong. Maybe they're right. Well, maybe it's because they're naive. Maybe it's because they're optimistic. Who can say? Really, we need the young people to get on and tell you. But that's what I think it is. I think you know, he's offering them a future, and none of the other parties, no one else is offering them a future. I mean, it's pretty dire for them. I mean, what are they going to do? Never retire, never have a house,
absolutely,
never be able to have children, never be able to move out of their mum and dad's back bedroom. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, Mike, it is. I absolutely get it. If you are a young person right now, anybody who isn't Labour or the Conservatives, I think, becomes quite appealing, because you've been betrayed. You've been completely and utterly neglected and failed and betrayed. First by the blue lot, the red lot, bit better maybe, helping renters, protection of the workers and so on, fine. Is Labour offering anything that's going to be transformative for the millions of young people living hand to mouth in this country, not living a life, just earning enough barely to pay the rent, and maybe buy a couple of pints in the pub at the end of the month or go to the cinema and that's it? What's Labour offering that's going to transform that and give them their futures back? Nothing. Matt's right, isn't it? Anybody who pretends that they are or says that they are is going to become attractive, because the two main parties when it comes to young people are an absolute disgrace. Thank you, Matt. Layla's in Upper Edmonton tonight. As a younger person, Layla, how old are you, if you don't mind me asking? Evening.
I'm 28. I'm actually quite a big fan of this show and also Henry Reilly as well.
Oh, I'll pass it on.
Yeah, you two are my favourites.
Thanks, Leigh. That's kind.
So, what I wanted to say is, like, I do definitely agree that because older people vote in larger numbers, like, obviously politicians are going to kind of cater more to ensuring that they get that older vote because of the fact that they turn out at the ballot box in greater numbers.
Yep.
So, like, for example, I definitely do not support the triple... Well, it's not that I don't support the triple lock, but you can't be giving a triple lock pension, state yep. pension, to every single person. That needs to be means tested
yep.
at the end of the day, because there are people, like pensioners, who are actually quite wealthy, who don't need a triple lock pension in addition to the wealth that they already have. But it's because of this fact that you've got the older people voting in larger numbers that policies in the government are catered towards that generation.
Yep.
And so if you go against something like the triple lock, it's political suicide. But all that's doing is driving up the pension age for someone like me. When at the end of the day, like, we cannot afford to give a triple lock pension long term to every single
person. It's your taxes, Layla. It's your taxes that are paying for the government, and it is this government because it's continued the policy of just chucking billions and billions of pounds of our taxpayers' money every single year. A group of people, as you say, and I'm not talking about all pensioners here, I'm talking about the wealthier ones, like you are, who don't need it. And I get why that makes young people angry. Is Jeremy Corbyn the answer, do you think?
So, like, what I would say, right, you know, like, when you're listening to the radio, you always hear certain groups of people saying, this is not the Labour Party I voted for. Like, this is not what Labour should stand for. This is not what Labour Party is. And I think, like, with Keir Starmer, a lot of it's getting in his way is actually rooted in ideology. And I think a lot of the backlash is fueled by, like, social media and headlines. And I think we need to actually look at the facts and the reality. Like, I don't think, like, people, let me put it this way, right? Like, with the winter fuel payment,
yep.
or with the winter fuel freeze, or with the pip cuts, people just have this automatic click their fingers reaction. This is not what a Labour government does. This is not the left-wing policy. This is not a socialist policy. But, you know, it's not about whether it's left-wing or Labour or socialist or whatever label you want to put on it. It's about whether it makes sense or not. Now, actually, with the winter fuel cuts that Starmer was proposing, I supported those.
So
and
did
actually,
I.
That is true. It's showing that he looks out for young people, because a lot of wealthy pensioners were getting rent to fuel payments, which they didn't need.
And it was the way they did it that was the problem, wasn't it, Leila? But for me, it was the problem. But you're right as well. The backlash against that. The backlash when anybody dares mention the fact that we're spending basically as much on pensions as we are, more on pensions than we are on defence of the realm, people go mad. People go mad. Politicians get spooked. So they maintain the funding that goes to older people. They cut the funding that goes to younger people. And then they wonder why young people are so fed up with politics.
It's not like that. I think Jeremy Corbyn is the answer or whatever. But my issue is like with someone like, because the whole thing is with Jeremy Corbyn's party, it was like saying, okay, Starmer's party is not to the left wing enough. So we're going to do a party that represents the true left wing and it is socialist and it is left wing. But actually for a young person, policy that benefits me as a young person, it's not about whether it's the right wing or that it's left wing. What would really, like, for example, people said, oh, the winter fuel payment policy wasn't left wing enough.
No.
And that was part of or whatever. But actually, as a young person, that will benefit me. Or what about pip cut? I'm a young working person, right? And actually, if you look at it, the cost benefit claims went up rapidly after COVID, and it didn't go back down. And that trend wasn't mirrored in other European countries.
So, Leila,
and you know, like we all have hard times, and me myself, but like I still go out and work, even though sometimes it's not easy. So, like what I'm saying is, as a working person. The thing is, right now, without all the pip cuts, there's a 5 million black hole in Rachel Reeves' budget, which could potentially mean that taxes go up for a working person like me, as a young person. So the point I'm trying to make is with the pip cuts, I don't care is it left-wing, is it right-wing.
I
care that for me, it could lead to my taxes going up, when I don't always have an easy time, but I still go to work.
Do you think Jeremy Corbyn would do a better job for you and people in your age group?
He needs to set out a very clear plan of what it is he's going to do. He can't just do big talk. At the end of the day, what is really going to change this country is if there's economic growth. That's the first thing that's going to actually get this out of. We're having to make cuts here, or we're having to raise taxes.
So you're not convinced that Corbyn has got the answers to the problems that we're talking about?
I think the answer to this problem is economic growth, because now Rachel Reeves is in a cycle where she can't cut because there's too much backlash. She's having to raise taxes. It was a nightmare having to raise that national insurance on employers,
because now
she's turning around saying, I'm cutting red tape for pubs.
This is the thing with Corbyn. He promises the world. What would he actually deliver? What would he actually deliver for those young people? And would it really materialise? Or is this utopian dream of a fairer, better, juster country where everybody's, you know, rolling in cash and opportunity? Is he selling a lie? Is he peddling a myth? I don't know. Leila, thank you. Really interesting call. Thank you very much, Niamh, for calling at 0345 6060973. If you've got answers to that, if you are young, are you as excited? Are you attracted to the idea of this new party led by Jeremy Corbyn and Zara Sultana? More of your calls on that to come. And
to win it for England this time round, Chloe Kelly is staying home.
After that incredible moment yesterday, yet another Euros victory for the Lionesses, we will talk more about the issue and the calls today for the England women's players to be given exactly the same money in terms of bonuses as the men. Get more on that just after the news headlines. Dara Jackson.
Donald Trump's said real starvation is happening in Gaza and has promised to help set up food centres. He was speaking beside Sir Keir Starmer at his Ayrshire golf course. Two Israeli human rights organisations now claim genocide is taking place in Gaza. Israel denies this. Two men have died after four people were stabbed at a business premises near London Bridge Station. Another man is in a life-threatening condition after the violence on Long Lane in Southwark this afternoon. And England's Lionesses have enjoyed a Downing Street reception. The double Euros champions were hosted by the Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner after being greeted by crowds as they landed at Southend Airport. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain moving into western areas tonight, lows of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
The people of Britain have bought loads of noise-cancelling headphones. With a Barclaycard Rewards credit card, you could get cash back on eligible purchases and no fees on spending overseas. What you buy is your business. Rewarding you is ours. Subject to financial status, T's and C's apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 28.9% APR representative variable and 28.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Train to Peckham. Kids in tow. Rooftop cinema time.
6 packs of popcorn? I think one will do, Nina.
Ah, clear skies, comfy seats, a talking panda. Clearly what we all needed. Okay, everyone's seated and happily doing panda impressions. I wonder when Nan can watch the kids so I can come back with James. Oh, just the two of us.
Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced tickets from only £8 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Save this summer with Lidl. Our mini mix has something for everyone. With a pack of 12 Bon Gelati ice creams down to just £2.45 with Lidl Plus. That's how you master a meltdown. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this summer today. 18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LBTV. Offer ends 30th of July.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Text 84850.
It's 11:34. Let's come straight back to your calls about Jeremy Corbyn. Why do young people love him while the rest of the country is less enamoured, shall we say? Pete's in Lancaster this evening. How are you doing, Pete?
I'm all right, thank you. Yeah,
You're not a young person. Are you a fan of Jeremy Corbyn?
Yes, I have been in the past. I certainly was when I was sort of in the Labour Party and voting and working for the Labour Party and the trade union. I thought, as I was getting older, I thought, well, here's somebody who's actually offering something left of centre for a change for the first time in my life. So, yeah, I was quite enthusiastic about him. But
are you still?
Not so much. I think he's not as popular. You know, he might get 500,000 supports or whatever, but he's not going to be voted in, sadly.
He's not going to become Prime Minister, but he might do quite well, not least because so many young people seem to adore the guy.
I don't know about that, but I mean, I think people often say it seems to be, you know, extreme or ridiculous to support Jeremy Corbyn, but really, he's not that unusual. He's only slightly left of centre.
I don't think he's extreme. Why do you think he's so popular with the young, especially, Pete?
I think, Bob, perhaps for young people, they like a bit of idealism. And he does offer that, even if it might be in a sort of old-fashioned cardigan sort of way.
Bit of hope.
Yeah, that's what attracted him to me when I was in my 60s. So, and it is different in that, you know, young people perhaps are a little bit sick of what we've seen, you know, particularly in recent years when you get governments that are just cutting everything back and public services are always being degraded and the country is going downhill in many ways. It's nice to see somebody offering a bit of an alternative.
So what, you're not, but why, what's put you off him in the last few years?
When I was in the last two elections before the last one, I was canvassing for the Labour Party. And people were saying to me, well, I would vote Labour, but I'm not voting for Corbyn.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's just, I mean, I would, and I did, you know, but I thought it was just a shame in that people never had they never got the right picture of what a left of centre government could be.
Yeah, and he's still very unpopular. Jeremy Corbyn amongst the country is very unpopular, but amongst young people, 18 to 24 in particular, he's very popular. And we're getting there, I think. We're getting some sort of our theories now as to why. Pete says it's about hope. It's about it's about idealism. Is it that? Is it more about Gaza? Is it about a certain policy? Or what do you think it is? Thank you, Pete, for the call. If you are under the age of 35, even if you're not a Corbyn supporter yourself, what do you think that man and this new party that he is heavily involved in setting up, what is it they are offering that is so appealing and so attractive to your generation, my generation, our generation? 03456060973. More of your calls to come on that in just a couple of minutes' time. 11:37 the time. We've got to pause, though, haven't we? We have to pause together and just talk for 5 minutes about that incredible moment last night where Chloe Kelly buries that penalty and the Lionesses become champions of Europe for the second time in 3 years, prompting calls today, interestingly, for them to be paid the same prize money as the blokes are, which does not happen right now. The total prize money for the women's Euros this year, £34 million. The total prize money for the men's Euros last year, £287 million. Is that fair? Is that justifiable? Eleanor Mills joins us, founder of noon.org.uk, which helps midlife women, former chair of Women in Journalism, author of Much More to Come, who has written for the Daily Telegraph today, now give women footballers the same prize money as men. Eleanor, great to have you with us. We'll talk more about the pay issue in just a moment. But first, let's just talk about that incredible final last night and your thoughts on it.
Well, as a woman, I think it's completely amazing having sat listening to so much gloom and doom as my brothers, I've got six brothers, listen to football matches. It was also always kind of crying with Gaza or, you know, cries of Southgate and this dejection and gloom every time England played. So to have the women win the Euros twice, I mean, just think how...
In three years,
just think how crazy this country would be going if the men had done that. And I think it's really important that we're all so excited by the triumph of our incredible girls and that they make us all feel kind of really proud to be part of a country which has also supported such an egalitarian and kind of anti-sexist view of sport.
And they really have sort of captured the imagination, haven't they, in a way that perhaps hadn't happened until the Lionesses had that success. I mean, even on the tube into work tonight, it was a group of men, and I heard one of them say, oh, I wasn't really watching it, but I watched one, I think it was the quarter final, he said, and now I'm gripped. And he was just saying that to his mates on the train. So they really have transformed women's football in this country.
They really have, but I think it's not just about the men, it's about the women. I think it's absolutely transformed the way that women think about sport and how engaged they are. Mm-hmm. And also I think it's transformed a whole kind of idea about what women's bodies are for. To see all those amazing, beautiful young women performing such incredible kind of athletic feats and kind of really kind of fighting and showing such resilience and grit, the kind of resilience and grit our men could only dream of, I think is absolutely inspiring.
Damning, isn't it?
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, when was the last time the men's team won the Euros?
They came close, but true, they didn't have perhaps quite the mental resilience that the Lionesses have shown the last few years. And yet, talking again of that sort of comparison, Eleanor, financially at least, the women are not going to be rewarded in the way that they would have been if they were blokes.
Oh, Ben, are you surprised about that?
I'm not. And yet, I'll be totally honest with you, Eleanor. And you tell me if you think I'm wrong on this. Part of me thinks, of course, they should be. Their achievement is just as great. Their talent is just as deserving of recognition. Another part of me says, well, when the women's game is the sort of multi-billion pound product in the same way as the men's is, when they are getting those level of sponsorship and so on, then it would be fair. But until then, yes, maybe it's unfair, but it sort of makes sense.
But hang on, Ben, how much bigger can it be? You know, I was the editorial director of the Sunday Times. It's, you know, it's on the front page of every single paper. Everybody is talking about it.
Sure.
This is the biggest event of the weekend. It was an enormous TV audience. And what it shows is that is if you give the women the spotlight, if you give them the space and the opportunity and the people the chance to see them play, they can be just as exciting and get everybody in just as much of an uproar as the men. They just haven't been given a chance. And I also think, okay, fair enough, maybe the women's game is not yet as big as the men's, but the wage differential, if you think of the kind of publicity and the hype and the TV kind of viewing figures over the last few days, is ridiculous. You know, these women got £97,000 each as a bonus for winning the Euros. And that's the kind of money that a football, you know, good male football player earns in a week.
Or a day.
Yeah. £300 million more prize money in the men's Euros last year than there was for the whole of the women this year. It was over £300 million for the men and, you know, and like £330 million for the men and about £30 million for the whole of the women's tournament.
And again, I instinctively think that's not fair, but then another part of me says, well, actually, is that because the sponsorship figures are lower? Is that because the TV rights don't sell for as much?
Well, it's because
there's not as much
sport,
money sloshing around, I guess, the women's game.
But it's because it's chicken and egg here, Ben, because it's because women's sport in that kind of commercial way is still very much in its infancy.
Yes.
Because of the kind of, you know, the kind of gender kind of the gender discrimination within our culture, that women haven't been taken seriously in kind of sports terms. It's the first time women have actually been given a chance to kind of play on a big international stage like that and show that they can thrill the world and inspire the country. So I think if we give women more of that chance to kind of show their unbelievable, excellent quality and inspire the women in our country and the men, I think, then it can be just as valuable an asset as the men's football.
And would you say to know that because of that differential, because of the fact they are financially rewarded so much less than the men would have been, the message is still sort of being sent that women's football is somehow inferior or kind of...
No, I would say, on the contrary, Ben, I would say it was more pure. I think when you look at those girls, they're doing it for the kind of heart and soul of their country, for their own pride, for their team, for their mum, you know, for their incredible kind of female coach. They're really kind of bonded into a unit. This is the thing that matters to the most in their life. They're not thinking, oh, where's my next condo?
It's not corrupted by money in the same way as the men's.
They're not going out and behaving quite as some of those young male footballers do.
Well, yes, and that is not something that I think any sport should seek to emulate. But in terms of UEFA paying out a lot less for the women's success than the men's, the message that they send is still somehow that women's football shouldn't be respected in the same way?
Well, I just think this is let's be benign and kind in our inference here, Ben. Let's see it as this is the beginning of a kind of explosion and excitement about women's football, the Lionesses, and also what women are capable in the sporting arena. And also, if you look at the engagement by women within my own community, Noon, I run a community of women in midlife, women across all ages. I've got daughters in their 20s. They've been super excited about the Lionesses. And I think it really is changing our conception of what women can do. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so inspiring for everyone to see these incredible young women triumph, and not in a kind of flashy way, but through really hanging in there in a kind of dogged way, which I think is really inspiring, is the way that we all kind of get through in life. And then this amazing moment of joy and triumph at the end.
Eleanor, thank you for coming on and talking to us. Eleanor Mills, founder of noon.org.uk, former chair of Women in Journalism. Worth reading her piece in The Telegraph, "Now Give Women Footballers the Same Prize Money as Men." Do let me know your thoughts on that. They don't get paid as much in terms of bonuses. They don't get as much in prize money. But it's also the case that the media rights are worth a lot less. The advertising is worth a lot less. The sponsorship is worth a lot less. It's not to diminish their achievement at all. It's just a fact. So given the fact that at least for now, women's football isn't as big money as men's football, doesn't make as much revenue as men's football, should they be paid the same? 03456060973. If you've got thoughts on that, would love to hear them. You can text me Aon 84850. We will talk more about that, and we'll talk lots more about Jeremy Corbyn and why the young people in this country seems to be flocking towards him straight after this, 11:16.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The dancing stopped and the horror began. Three innocent girls were murdered at a Taylor Swift dance class 12 months ago tomorrow. Failed by the glaringly incompetent Prevent Counterterrorism Programme.
There are grave questions about how this network of agencies failed to identify and act on the risks.
The killer also ordered a deadly weapon with ease.
He was easily able to order a knife. That's a total disgrace.
12 months on, I'll be asking, Southport, can we be assured it could never happen again?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back to tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no.
Me? I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers. Here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in. Kettle's on.
Oh, thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
Vodafone's new customer service is a little bit different. It's called Just Ask Once. Message them on the Vodafone app. You deal with one person and they keep you updated until it's sorted. So you can get on with your day. Walkies is then. Just Ask Once. Customer service made easy from Vodafone, the nation's network.
Available via your My Vodafone app. Messaging service only. Exclusions apply. Vodafone UK supporting the nation since 1984. More details, vodafone.co.uk/network.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Save this summer with Lidl. Our mini mix has something for everyone. With a pack of 12 Bon Gelati ice creams down to just £2.45 with Lidl Plus. That's how you master a meltdown. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this summer today.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See Lidl.co.uk/LBTV. Offer ends 30th of July.
Leading Britain's conversation. Ben Kentish. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:49 is the time. We're talking about Jeremy Corbyn. Why he is so popular. What's going on with young people? What is he offering them? What is he peddling them that they seem to like so much? A few of you getting in touch to talk about the Lionesses. Talk to more about that in a moment as well. First, though, let's talk to Sarah in Bootle about Corbyn. Sarah.
Good evening, Ben.
Evening.
I think the reason why the young people, anyone under 25, is attracted to Corbyn is down to two things, hope and idealism, of which we have precious little of in this country for the last 15 years. Everyone thought that when Starmer got in, there might be a tiny bit of hope until he revealed that he was more Tory than the Tories in his actions. I mean,
Well, Sarah, hold on. We're talking about young people here. You've heard me criticise the Labour government, including what they're doing for young people. But they're doing a lot more than the last lot did. Renters' rights, employment rights, breakfast clubs for schools, childcare, the list goes on. They are doing things for young people that the Tories weren't. I don't think they're as bad as the last lot.
Well, I think what it is as well, when the young people are seeing what's going on today, especially up in the north, and you're seeing deprivation by the bucket load. I mean, the old-fashioned Victorian diseases are coming back in fashion, things like scurvy, rickets, all of them. Diseases of deprivation and poverty, which the government are basically ignoring, and they're seeing that people can't afford to go and get food, even if they've got a job. Some people have got two jobs and still can't afford it, and they're thinking,
you would think that Jeremy Corbyn would therefore be, you know, the sort of the next prime minister in waiting, but he's not. Most people of most age groups don't like the guy at all.
There's the problem. He is Marmite. He is too idealistic for his own good. The other reason why people like Corbyn, not dislike him, is because he's the only one who's been banging on about Gaza and saying, look what's going on. Now, what happened in Gaza and what's happened from the October 23 onwards, both sides, it's wrong.
But do you think that's a big part of why young people like him so much, because they think that he is the only one that's saying what they want to be said on Gaza?
I think that's got a lot to do with it, because nobody wants, no, regardless who it is, but it's the Israeli hostages or the civilians in Gaza, no one wants to see anything detrimental happen to anybody. They're going, this is just bang out of order. Hamas were wrong to go and take the hostages and do what they did. And also the Israelis for going OTT.
Sarah, appreciate the call as always. Thank you very, very much indeed. Is it Gaza? Is that right? If you are somebody who would vote for Jeremy Corbyn at the next general election, or at least would think about it, particularly if you're under the age of, I don't know, 35, 40, let's say, give me a call. You have 8 minutes to do it and tell me what it is that he is offering that so many people like you and other people, if this poll is correct, in your age group, my age group, like so much. 0345 6060 973 is the number. Let's talk to Andy in Crayford. Andy, you want to pick up on the conversation we were just having about the Lionesses and their pay? Feel free.
Oh, hi, Ben.
Hi.
Yeah. Hi, yeah, evening. I think they've done a fine job. I think, but when I look at the quality of the football, I just think they're not as technically gifted as men. I don't know, it's just the way that, I mean, they did an experiment, didn't they? The Swiss professional team got beaten 7-1 by under-15s. Schoolboys have got humiliated, and I think they've only just broke into the sport. Do you know what I mean? They need to sort of...
They haven't broken into it. They have made it a far bigger sport than it was before. They have driven women's football forward.
What I'm saying is a pedigree, and I don't know. I don't want to say.
They've won. Andy, they've actually won something. When was the last time the men's team did that?
Well, 66.
Well, this is it. So we've got to give them some credit, haven't we?
My dad's idol, you know.
They've shown the bottle and the skill and the mental resilience and all the rest of it that the men's team, frankly, could only dream of all these years.
The World Cup, I think we did well against Spain. You know, Cole Palmer pulled one back.
Andy, what have we won? What has the England men's football team won in the last half a century?
Spain were technically better than England, actually.
Won, and that's what matters. And they've done it twice in 3 years. And they're not going to get paid as much as the blokes would have done.
Lady Luck was on their side a bit.
They won.
Yeah, Lady Luck.
Surely they deserve the same recognition, and I'm talking about financial recognition.
I'm talking about financial recognition.
They should get the same prize money as the bloke, surely.
Well, let's put it to the test then. Let's just see them play, the England under-16.
But why? That's different sports. They're different. It's completely different. You're diminishing their talent and their achievements just because they lose to a men's team. They did really well.
I think the England team have done really well as well. The men's, I think we've done all right. We ain't won it,
Is it fair that the women get so much less in prize money than the men?
It probably isn't fair, but
so they should get the same.
Men being around, well. I can't answer that, but I'm just telling you my opinion, that's all.
Give me your opinion on that, Andy. Should they get the same money as the men?
I don't think so, no.
Why?
Because I just don't think they should.
But why?
I don't know. Because they're not as good. I think the men play...
But they are as good. They are as good in their sport, which is women's football.
Yeah.
They won the tournament, and they're going to get $80,000, and the men would have got millions.
Yeah. It's a man's world, I suppose, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's just sexism, isn't it? It's what it is.
Well, yeah, maybe. Well, there you go. You've answered it. What I'm saying is, it's a new developed sport, and that's all I'm saying. That's my opinion.
Andy, appreciate it. Is Andy right? Is Andy right to say, look, you got to look at football across the board, football as a whole, and the women are somehow, I don't know, less talented than the men? I don't think so. 0345 6060 973. Here's Kay in Surrey pointing out rightly the FA banned women's football for 50 years. That's why women are still playing catch up with the men's game in terms of support and investments. Kay says, I don't think the women should earn what the men do at the moment, because what the men earn in 2025 is disgusting. They rip off their fans to fund their astronomical wages. Men and women should be paid equally. The men's pay should be lowered to accommodate this. We should call it reparations from the FA and men setting women's football back for so long. Sounds good to me. What about you? Mark's in Plymouth. We will talk more about Jeremy Corbyn in a moment. First, Mark, you want to stick with the Lionesses?
Yeah, just a quick one. Yeah, I really don't like football, but I enjoy watching the women's game. And one thing I wanted to mention that's not been mentioned before on any radio programme, and this, it just prompted me, your previous caller. If you watch the women play and you watch the men play, the difference in tackling is just night and day. The men, and one of the reasons that put me off male football, is they just push each other to the point where there's less skill with the feet. Now, women, I'm not saying they don't tackle in an aggressive way at all, but they tackle totally differently. And I saw more skill with the women's game in the way they don't have to tackle like men do to get possession of the ball than I do in a men's game.
And you enjoyed watching it more than the blokes?
I did, yeah.
Mark, appreciate the call. Thank you. I think our guest was right. I think Mark's right. The women have shown more bottle and guts. Men's football, elite men's football now, a bunch of overpaid prima donnas who roll around screaming at the first touch of any, first sign of any tackle, in many cases. Women's game, far more going for it at the moment, I would say, than the top of the men's. Thank you, Mark. Keep your calls coming on that. Let's just touch base first, though, with Dennis in Birmingham, who wants to talk about our main subject this hour, Dennis. Jeremy Corbyn, why is he doing so well amongst young people like yourself? Hi.
Hi, Ben. Yeah, I just want to say great show as well. I do listen to you on the way home.
Oh,
from
good
work,
man. Thank
so,
you.
Yeah, keep it going, mate. Really good. Yeah,
thanks,
I think from my perspective, I think he offers hope, I think, to a lot of young people, I think, in terms of he's got conviction. And I think centre ground of politics isn't where young people tend to favour because they don't have faith in it. I think he doesn't tiptoe around policy. And I think you look at that from the left and the right side of the most, you know, extreme sides of politics. I think with the, you get what you see, you know, it's not, you know, they say one thing and then do a U-turn and go on to something else. You know, you do get what you see with, you know, Jeremy Corbyn, you know, on the left side and, you know, some people obviously, you know, similar on the right side as well, you know.
It's about authenticity, is it? That's what he's offering that the young people think they don't get from other politicians.
Correct, and I think that's why there's a bit of a rise within, you know, within politics on both sides of that, really. I think that's what he offers. And I think he's got conviction when he did, you know, where he stood against the Iraq war and got arrested for it, I think, at the time. You know, he stands for, you know, for what he says. And I think, regardless of whether you like him or not, I think people see that authenticity and I think they like that. And I think that's where he gets his movement from, I think.
And you'd be tempted, would you, Dennis?
I would be, yes, yeah, definitely, yeah. I think he did a really good election last time where he didn't win, but he had a fully costed budget. I thought that was quite good where the Labour Party handed out the supplementary pack. I thought they did really well, but, yeah, I mean, it is a bit like Marmite, like your previous caller said. You know, I think, you know, people do vote a bit more on personality as well, whereas I think we should be more focused on, you know, the policy side of things.
But old Jeremy Corbyn might be heard if you are right, and there's more people like you might be heard being sung from the rafters at Glastonbury once again in a year or two. Yeah,
I think there's definitely a possibility. I don't think it's an election winning party at the moment. I think they're more there to cause, I wouldn't say disruption, but more to offer an opportunity or an alternative to the mainstream, political parties. Really, I think that's what they'll do. They'll do quite well. I think they'll drum up a lot of support, you know, especially within the young and sort of that, you know, win some of that sort of swing voters within the centre. But I think they'll do quite well to offer that. But the key thing is for them to remain authentic, really. You know, they stand by policy, whether you like it or not, and they see it through, not you know, do U-turns or change.
I don't think Jeremy Corbyn's done a U-turn in his life. He is a man, like him or loathe him, who sticks to his guns and sticks to what he believes. Dennis, thank you very, very much. Thank you for the kind words as well. Wrapping up our conversation about Jeremy Corbyn, loads of you getting in touch about the lionesses and whether they should be paid the same as the men. Keep taking your calls on that in the next hour. But another issue that I want to get your thoughts on, 600,000 graduates, university graduates, are now claiming benefits, it's been revealed today. What is going on there? Are they just lazy and work shy? Are the jobs not out there? What's happening? If you are one of them, or you can shed some light on how on earth more than 500,000 people with university degrees are now on benefits, pick up the phone. You know what to do. 0345 60 60 973. We'll talk lots more about that, about the lionesses, and also about the anniversary, the one-year anniversary of the Southport attack, just after this. It's just gone midnight.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From
From Global's newsroom, the Prime Minister and Donald Trump have agreed urgent action must be taken to bring an end to misery and starvation in Gaza. The two leaders travelled to Aberdeen in Air Force One for a private dinner earlier at the US President's of the Gulf Resort. Mr. Trump also suggested he will cut short a 50-day deadline given to President Putin to agree a deal with Ukraine. The US President says he'd thought reaching an agreement would be more straightforward.
We thought we had that settled numerous times. And then President Putin goes out and starts launching rockets into some city like Kiev. And I say, that's not the way to do it. So we'll see what happens with that. I'm very disappointed. I'm disappointed in President Putin. So we're going to have to look, and I'm going to reduce that 50 days that I gave him to a lesser number, because I think I already know the answer what's going to happen.
A murder investigation has begun following the death of two men in a stabbing in South London. The police were called to Long Lane in Southwark yesterday afternoon. One man in his 50s died at the scene. Another in his 20s died in hospital. Scotland Yard say the violence wasn't terror-related. A 42-year-old woman will be sentenced in October after admitting the manslaughter of her two-year-old daughter. Alice Mackey died after being found in a pond in Hampshire in September 2023. Her mother, Annabel Mackey, denied murder, which was accepted by the prosecution following a report she was in a state of diminished responsibility. A man's appeared in court following a disturbance on an EasyJet flight between Luton and Glasgow Airport. Counter-terror police are continuing to investigate video footage allegedly taken on board. Daily deliveries of second-class post have ended, the regulators allowing them every other day in the week now, with nothing on Saturday to save Royal Mail money. And England's triumphant Lionesses have been enjoying a Downing Street reception to celebrate winning the Women's Euros. They were hosted by the Deputy Prime Minister, Angela Rayner. Speaking outside Number 10 earlier, manager Serena Wiegmann says the tournament victory still hasn't sunk in yet.
It's very, very special to being able to go inside but also be in the garden there. Really, really nice. They put up some pictures of us that show what we had done in the Euros. Lovely, a very warm welcome. It was very, very special.
LBC weather largely cloudy with patchy rain over central and southern areas today. A few heavy showers in southern England, dry with sunny spells in the far northeast of Scotland, a high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
We're going to do things slightly differently this hour because we've been inundated with you wanting to talk about the Lionesses and the fact they're currently paid less in terms of prize money than the men. We will still talk about the fact that there are 600,000 university graduates on benefits a little later in the hour. But this is your show and you want to talk about the Lionesses, so that is what we are going to talk about. And we're talking about it for the sole reason that they are, despite their incredible success, despite winning the Euros not one more time, but two more times now than the England's men team have managed in the last few decades, they are still going to be paid far less in prize money than they would if they were men. And I want your thoughts, if you would be so kind between now and 1 o'clock, on whether you think that is fair. Because one argument says it's absolutely outrageous that the women, despite their stunning success, despite inspiring a nation twice in 3 years, despite inspiring an entire generation of girls to take up football, winning something, not once but twice, are still only going to get £87,000 in prize money each, whereas the men would have got millions. Other people, and you heard Andy perhaps before the news, saying it's just not the same. They're not as skilled, they're not as talented, there's not as much money in women's football, so it might not be right, it might not be fair, but it still makes sense that they get paid less. That only when women's football has the multi-billion pound industry behind it that men's football does, will they deserve and be justified in being paid the same as the blokes. 0345 6060 973. I've got slightly mixed thoughts on this one. Because I don't agree with Andy. I think the women have to be judged by the standards in women's football, and the Lionesses are at the very, very top of their game. So I don't buy the argument that, well, if they played a men's team, they would lose, because we're comparing apples and pears there. have a little bit more time for the people to say, well, look, it's no disrespect to the Lionesses, it's no slight on them at all. But UEFA, in this case, who organised the Euros, UEFA can't pay the same prize money for a tournament that attracted about £32 million in euros in revenue as a tournament that attracted hundreds and hundreds of millions of euros in prize money. And that is the difference, I'll give you the figures a little bit later, between the men's and the women's. Men's football right now, at least, is a incredibly lucrative industry where the media rights are sold for billions and the sponsors pay millions and millions and millions of pounds, and that is reflected in the prize money. Women's football, growing massively, has grown massively, hopefully will continue to grow massively, but doesn't have that much money behind it right now. And so when the organisers say, well, you know, the prize money is a reflection of how much money the tournament has brought in, I kind of have a bit of sympathy for that. Is that unfair? Is that unreasonable of me? Is that just unjustifiable? Is that just penalising the Lionesses solely for being women? You tell me. 0345 6060 973. Or is that just the fact, as Matt puts it, that football is not a public service, it's a private business? Let's just reflect for a moment. Let's just cast our minds back 24 hours or so to that moment. Chloe Kelly burying that winning penalty and reflecting on that achievement post-match.
Do you know what? This team shows exactly what it's like about to be English. I'm so proud to be English right now, and these girls are unbelievable.
They are unbelievable, and I will leap to their defence when people say, oh, they're not good, they're not talented, they're not skilled. Would they lose to the men? Yeah, of course they'd lose to the men, but that's not a comparison. You don't say, oh, the fastest woman in the world is not particularly impressive because she'd probably lose a race to Usain Bolt. That'd be a ridiculous thing to say. You don't say, I don't know, that the female world record holder in weightlifting doesn't deserve the world record because a man would lift more. It's a ludicrous comparison, isn't it? But does that mean the women, in this case the Lionesses, should be paid the same in prize money as the men are? 0345 6060 973 is the number for your thoughts on that. And we will talk more a little later about university graduates and why more than 500,000 of them are now claiming benefits. Let's talk to Jay just before we do all of that, though, about the Lionesses. Jay's in Willesden. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for taking my call. I think I called you last time and said I agree with you 95% of the time. This is another one of those occasions where I don't agree with you.
Okay, go on. That's fine, Jay. We like that.
I'm going to test you, first of all, if I may. Do you think the England under-21 men's team, the under-21, should be paid the same as the women and the senior men's team as well?
Do I think the England under-21's men's team should be paid the same as the women? No, I don't, because they will go on to become the adults' men's teams, and they will get that in time.
No, not necessarily. A lot of the men that are playing under 21 don't make it to the senior team for whatever reason. They go off the rails.
But that's because they're not good enough, whereas the Lionesses are at the very, very top of their game in the world.
Okay, so then you're arguing that the Spanish women's team shouldn't be paid that much, the Italian women's team, the Dutch women's team, etc., etc. You're saying it should only be the English women that are paid equivalent to the English men, but the women that play Spain.
No, it is whoever wins the tournament. So we're talking about whoever wins the Euros, which of course in this case was the Lionesses, should get, whether they should get the same bonuses from UEFA, which organises the tournament, as the men do.
Okay, so tell me, how many tournaments have the men's under 21 team won recently?
They won one quite recently. Was that under 18s?
Yeah, and what? No. The men's under 21 team have won the last three tournaments, I believe. 25, 23, 21, that's World Cups and Euro.
Yep.
They don't get paid remotely as close.
But
I don't think you can
differentiate on age in the same way that you can on sex.
I'm not differentiating any, but what I'm saying is that you get paid according to the money that you generate, according to the entertainment value you provide.
Yes.
Now, I can guarantee you, I haven't looked at the audience figures, but I can guarantee you, I wouldn't bet my life, the audience figures for the women's game yesterday probably didn't even touch the sides of the England men's finals.
I hear you.
Or probably even the semis or the quarters probably didn't generate the same commercial sponsorship, etc., etc. And another equivalent, another analogy is, You look at Saudi Arabia, they are now paying salaries to very average players
yep.
of £300,000-£500,000 a week. Eye-watering sums to very average players.
But, Jay, I've got to pick you up. And you and I usually agree on this, but you just said that they are paid on the entertainment they provide. And I don't think you can legitimately tell me that the England women's team are less entertaining than the England men's team.
Well, I think we have to, that's very subjective. So what we have to do is we have to look at the stats, i.e. the figures of people watching it.
That's not a reflection of entertainment. But if people aren't watching women's football in the same way, that is not necessary. And 16.2 million people did watch it last night, by the way. That's not necessarily because women's football is less entertaining. That's because it doesn't have the following, in part because it was banned by our own football association for half a century.
Yeah, but, I don't think we can go back to half a century, what happened to half a century ago. I think if you bring it up
we
to
have
today.
We have to, because if we're explaining why fewer people watch the women than watch the men's, and you're saying, oh, it's because it's less entertaining, I don't think it is. I think it's because the women's game was held back by law for decades in this country. And women were discouraged and told that football's not for you, it's a man's sport, or you're not even allowed to play it.
International football is a bit of an outlier. You look at domestic football, the women's game generates audiences in the five figures at best. They just about hit 10,000. Arsenal women's team, I heard recently, generates audiences that are almost as big as sort of bottom of the league, Premier League, or top of the Championship sort of figures. That's women's best team, Arsenal.
Yeah, and they're not being paid anywhere near as much as the men.
Because they're not drawing the audiences. If you go to a women's Premier League football game next season, this season coming up, the WSL Women's Super League, you will find audiences of maybe 5,000-7,000 pounds, 5,000-7,000 people per game, probably on average. I'm sort of guesstimating there. You go to the men's average Premier League game, it'll be a sellout. Every single one will be a sellout. There are very rarely Premier League games in the men's game that isn't sold out. And the viewing figures for that are huge as well. The subscriptions to Sky Sports, TNT Sports, that is primarily driven by men's football. You know, it's the same. No one wants to watch Italian football anymore. The standard's low. No one really watches men's under 21 because the standard is low. No one watches the Greek league, the Estonian league, because the standard is low. It doesn't attract the same audience. There's a reason why the English men's Premier League attracts not just the biggest audience compared to women or the under 21, but in the world, because it's some of the most entertaining football. If you look at countries like anywhere from Nigeria to India to Japan.
Women's football, the top level women's football, the Lionesses, the Women's Premier League, it's no less entertaining, Jay, I would say.
So then why doesn't Japan, Nigeria, India, Brazil pay big, big bucks to air it in their countries?
Because there's not the kind of public appeal for it in the same way just yet as there is for the men's game. But I don't think
why
that's about that? Entertainment.
Why is that?
For the reason that I'm coming back to, which is that it's basically societal sexism that has told women for a very, very long time, football's a man's game. Women weren't allowed to play it. They were discouraged from going to it. They've been held back. The women's game has been held back by sexism in sport in this country and across the world. I don't think it's about entertainment at all.
That's a cop-out answer, Ben. That's
not at all, Jay. Why is it a cop-out answer? It's the truth.
Because if you're living in one of the countries that I named or anywhere else in the world, you will happily pay a fee to watch it. You're not going to think, oh, this is a bit sexist if I don't, or whatever else.
If you grow up,
I don't understand how that logic applies in this
Jay, even in this country, until very recently, there was an idea, wasn't there, that women's football was rubbish, that football was a men's sport.
Oh, yeah.
That girls in school shouldn't play football, they should just play netball. And that mentality, that hasn't gone. We're getting there, and the game is growing in no small part because of the Lionesses' success. But
Ben, you've sidestepped the point. I agree with all of that, but you sidestepped the point that I'm making. What I'm saying to you is, look, commercial companies, they want to make money. They don't care if it's the men's game, the women's game, a Martian game.
And on
they
that,
just want to make money.
Yeah.
And if they see there's big money in the women's game, they will air it. They will pay the big money to the FA or whoever it is that collects the money.
But Jay,
and say, give us the women's Super League games to air on our
The difference
TV channel.
Isn't, I mean, it is big. It's not quite as big as I think you're making out. 16.2 million people watched the women's final last night. 24.2 million watched the men's.
I agree, but that's an outlier. You need to talk about the day-to-day.
But we're talking about the Lionesses. We're talking about this tournament.
Hmm.
We're not talking about the Women's Premier League or domestic football. We are talking about whether the prize money for the winners of the Euros should be the same for the women as it is for the men. And you're saying it's, well, it shouldn't be because the audience size is massively different.
But the men's prize money isn't that much.
The men's prize money is, the difference between the prize money for the men and the women is a lot more than the audience figures for the finals.
I have to be honest, I don't know. But the men, they don't even make money from the game. You do know that, the men's football team. They donate it all to charity.
They do. They get paid £2,000 a game and they donate it to charity. But we're talking about the bonuses.
They didn't make anything. But yeah, I appreciate that. But it doesn't take away from the fact that it's just not as attractive as a proposition because it doesn't generate the money. Unfortunately, it's a money business. And if you look at tennis is a good example. I think women are quite close to the men, aren't they, in terms of the payment for winning Wimbledon, the US Open, or whatever else it is.
I think it's now equal, but we'll check that.
I think it's equal, I think you might be right. But if it's not equal, it's very, very similar. Mm. And that's right, because the women's Wimbledon final generates, as far as I'm aware, such a bigger audience as the men. So I'm totally for equal pay between men and women in Wimbledon tennis more generally. Likewise in golf, if it does the same. But women's, it just doesn't generate the audiences, the commercial interest.
And Jay, on that, I mean, we agree, I think, we agree that that is a factor, that the fact that the women's game is bringing in a lot less money than the men's, that is inevitably, I think, isn't it going to be reflected in the prize money that's paid? Where we disagree, Jay, I think, rarely for you and I, is about why that's happening. You say it's less entertaining. I think it's far more about the kind of social trends that still, let's be honest, still discourage women from participating in, enjoying watching sports like football. We're getting there. It's changing. But not that quickly, perhaps. Jay, always a pleasure. Always thought-provoking. Thank you very, very much indeed. Loads of your calls coming on this. More to come. Right after this, 12:18.
This is LBC.
With UK Export Finance, I'm fulfilling more export orders from around the world with working capital support.
Export insurance means I'll get paid when exporting to challenging markets.
At UK Export Finance, we believe no viable UK export should fail for lack of finance or insurance. Between 2023 and 2024, we provided £8.8 billion of government-backed trade finance to support UK exports. Learn how we could help you win export contracts, fulfil orders and get paid. Search UK Export Finance today.
The longer days are here, and you know what that means? It's time for the Halfords Big Summer Sale. Grab up to 50% off a great range of motoring and cycling essentials for the holidays, like car cleaning, bikes, scooters and dash cams. So whether you're hitting the road, the bike trails or your favourite camping spot, you'll find plenty of savings to suit you. Visit your local Halfords experts in-store or shop online. Offer subject to availability, full T's and C's and exclusions apply. See halfords.com for details.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
12:19. Let me just give you the figures, because Jay raised the point validly about what the difference actually is. The difference in prize money. So this is given across all the teams based on how well they do. The prize money that UEFA, which organises the Euros, handed out this year in the women's tournament, £34 million. And that was a trebling, more than trebling, of the figure, the £12 million quid that was on offer in 2022. So £34 million split between the women's teams this year. The figure for the men's at the last Euros last year, £287 million. So the prize money for the blokes, 200 million quid more, well over 200 million quid more than the women. Is that fair? Is that justifiable? Is that sexist? Or is it, as Jay says, just a reflection of the fact that right now, like it or not, the men's game attracts more audiences and more money and more sponsorship and more investment than the women? And I do have sympathy with that point, I've got to say. I do have sympathy with that point. Because otherwise, UEFA are probably going to be paying out more in prize money than the actual tournament has brought in revenue, which would be a slightly strange thing to do just to level the playing field, wouldn't it? Let's talk to Joanne, new caller in Leon C, about this. Hi, Joanne, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How about yourself?
Yeah, very good, thank you, Ben.
Great to have you on the show for the first time, Joanne. What prompted you to call in tonight?
Well, I was just listening to the, forgive me if I forget the caller's name, but it was just, thank you. It just struck me as a very archaic view. You know, we're not measuring pay parity or reward on entertainment. Like, I forgot a day where we were measuring men's football on how entertaining it was and define entertainment. You know, it's a very, it struck me as a very archaic view on pay parity and how the sport is measured. I was just really, he sounded like quite a young guy. I'm in my 30s. I was just quite struck by that.
But it is a business, Joanne, isn't it? And what Jay was saying, and I've got to say, I do have sympathy with the point he was making. When the men's tournament is bringing in far more money for the organisers, then they are going to pay more out to the winners. When the women's tournament is bringing in a lot less money to the organisers, that will be reflected in the prize money as well.
I don't disagree with that, but there's got to be a break in the cycle, right? So this is what we've been up against this for some time now, and I don't disagree that it's a business, and which is why the men's sport makes far much more money, given sponsorship and whatever else. But we're forgetting a very raw talent.
Sure.
And I think we're losing what this really means for a breakthrough in pay disparity, gender pay, and a really significant moment in sport. I think that's getting lost in what we regard and define as quote-unquote entertainment. I think it's really sad.
But does it diminish their success and their achievements, Joanne? I don't know if it does. We'll see what people think. Lovely to talk to you. Thanks for calling in, Joanne. Let's speak again soon. Joanne in Leon C saying this is a wider problem about gender pay gaps. Is it? I'll give you the figures and revenue in a moment, by the way. First, though, 12:23 the time, I did promise you there was another story that I wanted to get your thoughts on, and indeed there is. 600,000 university graduates in this country are now claiming benefits, it's been revealed today. Are they lazy? Are they work shy? Are the jobs just not out there? What's going on? Let's try and get some answers. Joshy B is a master's graduate who went viral after talking about his experience of needing to claim universal credit. Joshy, great to have you on the programme. Just talk to me about your experience, if you would, sir. Morning.
Hi, sure. Good morning. How are you doing?
Good.
So, yeah, well, I finished up my studies and basically had to move back to a housing estate. And, you know, immediately I just had to sign on to, you know, keep my rent coming in and get some basic money coming through. And especially the timing around December, January, like the job market really bad. I'm in Scotland, keep this in mind, and I'm in West Lothian, which is very impoverished. There's a lot of, it's like old mining communities. So yeah. There's a real fight for the graduate jobs in places like Edinburgh, Glasgow. You're basically left doing Deliveroo, like Uber Eats driving or Amazon warehouse. And signing on was the right thing to do at the time.
Are you working at the same time? Because obviously universal credit, you can work and claim it.
No, not at the moment, no. I'm just doing some voluntary stuff. I do a bit here and there, like freelance. I still, like, I do music production, video production.
And is that because you can't get any job, Josh, or because you can't get the sort of jobs that you want to be doing?
I started looking for the jobs I really wanted, and then, you know, my expectations went down and down. But even finding really any job, I mean, I had about 2 interviews in the last month, didn't go anywhere. These are for just customer service, like waiter, stuff I'd experience in, bartender, still can't even get those right now. But I will say I'm in a pretty dire area, so that is a factor.
And you got a philosophy degree. You spent presumably an awful lot of money to get that philosophy degree.
Yeah, that was my undergrad, actually. And yeah, I mean, well, I did the typical, you know, you finish high school and everyone in high school is telling you, like, you know, go to university, like your parents, your teachers, you know, it's the best that you can get. But yeah, it didn't really lead anywhere afterwards. And I mean, I think a lot of other graduates can relate to that. Like, you had a lot of ideas and hopes after university, but it just didn't really go anywhere. And I mean, I look at the job market now especially, and I just don't really think there's any economic reason why would companies hire all these graduate people when they, you know, like, the, I mean, a lot of jobs are going overseas now. Technology is displacing all these jobs. Like, the supply and demand, there's way too many graduates and just not enough jobs.
Do you regret going to university? Was it a waste of time, do you think?
No, No, ultimately, no. I mean, going back to doing my master's, that basically saved me because I was in a bad rut being on a council estate for years at that point. So that, like, gave me a whole new lust for life, which I'll never regret, and pushed me forward here, even the confidence to do stuff on camera. Like, thankfully, during my master's, even spoke about the power of, like, posting on social media, using that. I mean, they were basically preparing us for the job market in some of my classes. They were like, okay, time to start getting your LinkedIn looking really good and time to start, like, networking because, yeah, I mean, that's all. I mean, the masters themselves these days, a lot of international students too, it's, you know, a lot of them just using it to get into the country. That's a different story. But, I mean, they really, I mean, universities are a business, aren't they? So
they are. But you, it clearly hasn't fulfilled the expectations that you had of study.
Yeah, I thought it was like my ticket out of the situation, and then getting dropped back into it like the next year. That was a really difficult pill to swallow. Like when I had to go back to the job center and like have them treat me like I was it was not fun.
Would for people who are thinking, you know, right now about whether they want to start university or not this September, would you still say it's worth doing?
Realistically, in the UK, if you're a young person especially, it's pretty much the only place you're going to go and have authentic experiences with other young people, have a good time and all that. I mean, there isn't really much waiting for you before or after in the UK right now. That's how I see it. I know that sounds really bleak, but I'd probably just go travel for a bit. Yeah, go to Thailand or some, go to Bangkok and go work on your laptop. There's actually, those places are actually
growing.
Instead
of going to university?
Yeah, or
because
what you
it's
want,
not
really.
Worth the money anymore.
Not worth the money. Yeah, I just feel like ultimately degrees, like they're teaching you stuff. Technology is displacing a lot of this information that they're teaching you. The curriculum, like even if it's 10 years old, 20 years old, like it's, a lot of it isn't really relevant anymore.
I hear you. You speak for a lot of people, I think. Joshy, thank you for coming on. Joshy B, master's graduate, who went viral after talking about his experience, as he just shared with us there, of struggling, failing to find work. If that's you, if you're in a similar position, paid the fees, got the loans, did the work, got the degree, now you can't get anything or anywhere with it, again, love to hear from you. So 03456060973 is the number to call. Here's Maria in Barking about the Lionesses. Women footballers should be paid more than the men, as we have achieved more than the men. Equal pay, she says. Let's talk to Sharon in Grays about that. Sharon, morning.
Morning, lovely.
Is Maria right? When we pay the women more than the men because they've actually won something?
Ridiculous. No, it's not about what you win. It's not about your trophy. It's not about how proud you feel. That's what the normal everyday people have to think and feel. It's a business and it's about boxes on seats. The thing is with the men, they've got generations of fan bases built up to get them the money that they're getting now. The women, as you said, 50 years, fans, they're just really getting their feet under the table now. Their merchandising, fan bases are building. It's going to take them a few more years before they get the sort of money that the men are going to get.
But then is there a danger here, Sharon, that the sort of the inference of what we're saying, and I don't disagree with you, and it's the point Jay was making, but the inference was we're almost punishing the Lionesses for the injustice that was meted out to women in generations past. It's not their fault that they don't get as many fans or as many audiences. They still are at the top of their game and they should be rewarded properly for it.
£200 million difference. Yeah. So you've got to think, these are two separate games. These are not the same sport at all. Two different types of play, two different genders. Everything's different about their games. The men have got far more power than the women. They're stronger, they're bigger, they're harder.
Does that mean they should get more prize money?
No, it just means that their game has had generations of men, women and children growing up to support them and put the money into their pockets to get the profits of £200-300 million on these big games.
Yeah.
And the women haven't got that merchandising, that bums on seats. Look, if you work in a business, any business, I don't care what business it is, and it's a corporate business, you're going to have your teams that work as groups to get the profits in. Now, the team that brings in the most profit and hits their targets, they get a bonus. The others don't. And it's finance, it's economy, that's all it is.
It's a business. And money speaks. And the figures are pretty stark. I'll tell you them after the news, actually. The figures are, in terms of investment and revenues between the women's Euros and the men's, they are massive. And that's the reality that Jay was talking about and that you are too. Thank you, Sharon. Lovely to talk to you this morning. Let's get the news headlines now. It is 12:31. Here's Daryl Jackson.
Sir Keir Starmer and Donald Trump have agreed urgent action must be taken to end suffering in Gaza, with the US president saying real starvation is happening there. The two leaders are in Aberdeen for a private dinner following talks in South Ayrshire. Officials in New York say at least two people have been shot, including a police officer in the city. The shooting, described as an active shooter incident, is understood to have happened inside a building on Park Avenue. And the Lionesses have been celebrating their Euros win at an outdoor reception in the garden behind 10 Downing Street. The players and staff were hosted by the Deputy Prime Minister, Angela Rayner. LBC weather, largely cloudy with patchy rain over central and southern areas today. A few heavy showers in southern England, a high of 23 degrees.
This is LBC.
Vodafone's new customer service is a little bit different. It's called Just Ask Once. Message them on the Vodafone app. You deal with one person and they keep you updated until it's sorted, so you can get on with your day. Walkies is then. Just Ask Once. Customer service made easy from Vodafone, the nation's network.
Available via your My Vodafone app. Messaging service only. Exclusions apply. Vodafone UK supporting the nation since 1984. More details at vodafone.co.uk/network.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 12:34. Loads of your calls, your texts, your messages coming in about whether or not it is right that the prize money for the women's Euros is more than about 250 million euros less than it is for the men's. Here's Mick on WhatsApp. I think the women should be paid the same as the men for the football. I watched the game from a local man's working club and the atmosphere was exciting. The whole club were on the edge of their seats cheering the Lionesses team on. But Aaron says the women's game currently attracts less commercial support from supporters and sponsors than the men's game. The pay differential represents this difference. Similarly, male models are paid significantly less than female models. That's interesting, are they? I wouldn't know. I've never got the call up to be a model, strangely. For the same reason. And this is Samuel. Women get more as a percentage than men do. The men's game is more interesting. This is a fact. Is it? Samuel says, it's funny, as someone who's played football, you can tell the difference in intensity between the two. Well, again, Sam, I don't think you can compare. Why do we feel this need to sort of compare women and men's football? You don't have that in athletics. You didn't have, oh, I don't know, when Kelly Holmes won an Olympic gold. You didn't have people going, oh, well, if you'd run against a man, you would have lost, wouldn't you, Kelly? And yet, when it comes to women's football, we seem to draw this comparison. Didn't get, I don't know, Jessica Ennis or... Give me another huge British Olympian, Denise Lewis or something. They weren't constantly told that they shouldn't be celebrated in the same way because they wouldn't have won if it was a mixed competition. So why do we do it with football? More of your calls to come on that in just a moment. The time now is 12:35. You are listening, I hope you know, to Ben Kentish here on LBC. Just want to pause our conversation about that to just touch on a story that's broken in the last half an hour or so. A new report has been published because today is the one-year anniversary of the Southport attack last summer. And a report by an organisation, a think tank, called the Institution for Public Policy Research, the IPPR, into the causes of the riots that followed that attack, has pointed the finger of blame in part at what they call the loss of community spaces, places like pubs and leisure centres and youth centres, and even peers that have created what the report calls tinderbox conditions for violence by the far right. Can we really blame the closure of pubs and youth centres on far-right riots? Let's talk to Donna Murray-Turner, community engagement strategist who advises the Metropolitan Police at New Scotland Yard. Donna, thank you for coming on this morning. Give us your thoughts and your experience, if you would, on whether we can really link pubs closing, youth centres closing, even peers closing their doors, if peers have doors, to what we saw last summer. Is that a bit of a leap in your view, or do you think there's something in it? Morning.
I think there's something in it. I think socialisation is a massive factor for how we all live and navigate our social spaces and our familial spaces. Community is built up out of social initiatives. And I think there is some correlation between it. I think the closure of pubs and youth spaces, definitely, I'll speak to that. The closure of youth spaces is definitely, we've seen it, haven't we? In that same year, since the report was initiated, we have seen the decline in, you know, youth activities and how that's had an effect on youth violence. And people, I think COVID as well, I think I spoke a couple of weeks ago to Sheila Fogarty about this. I think COVID has had a massive effect on us as a population. People are way more angrier. We're shorter fused because of not having access to other people and not having, you know, support systems. So I think overall, this continual closing of social spaces, because people interact, you seek support, you learn things in social spaces. Without that, people feel increasingly isolated and left to isolated thought patterns. We are seeing a real emergence of kind of right-wing rhetoric and narrative. And I think that actually having balance in one's social life and having access to around the conversations, I think that does go some way into dispelling some of this myth that is currently being sold.
We were talking the first hour, Donna, I appreciate you might not have heard it unless you were tuning in at 10 o'clock, but we were talking about immigration and integration. And I think, you know, what I hear listening to you is it's very difficult to have a sense of community and have cohesion and have integration if there aren't places for people to mix and hang out and learn from each other and talk to each other, and people from different backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds, class backgrounds, whatever it is, to actually meet. And that's not happening in the way that it was even 20 years ago.
100%. I think if we look at religious spaces, you know, often for some people that is their first form of socialization or their family or whatever it is, we no longer have a lot of those spaces. And where we did have them, they are being closed down. And that definitely does have an effect on how you see yourself, how you understand the world around you, how you receive information. Not everybody's into formal education. So sometimes your informal education came through those routes. Well, if those routes are closed down, how are you going to meet other people from other ethnic backgrounds and heritages and understand, you know, global context in a different way if you are only seeing what the media is telling you or what, you know, negative experience? It kind of reinforces the bias that are inherent to us all if we don't have other experiences that speak differently to them. So I think there is a correlation between it, definitely.
What else, Donna, just finally, would you like to see the government kind of prioritising? I think we're going to have a lot of talk over the next 24 hours, rightly, as we look back a year on, about what happened in Southport, the violence that was sparked by that. This weekend we've got the protests in Epping. What else, beyond shared spaces, should the government be focusing their efforts on to try and bring some of those communities, and all communities, back together?
I think there should be a resurrection of community spaces, but I'd also like to see the government acknowledge people's anger. Not because it's right, but because continually to ignoring people, to ignore people, even if their perspective is wrong, adds to the situation. It makes it worse. So why are they rioting? They're rioting because they feel that immigrants and other people are getting priority in spaces. You know, speak to the truth. NHS is failing because it's a model that was built over 70 years ago and is no longer sustainable currently. Be truthful about what people are experiencing. I think to continue to ignore people and not acknowledge their anger and not to have a balanced view. I think we do too much of either or when there is capacity for two things to be true at the same time, and there's capacity to have two strands of conversation. I think it's, you know, we need to adapt and move with the times. I think saying, well, it's either this way or that way, complexes people's minds. And when people are not having the social interaction that would speak to that, then you are only offering them one solution or another. And I think that's something that the government needs to look at. Responses cannot be either or. We can have a balance of both. Two things can be true at the same time. So I can feel, as a black woman born here in the UK, that when I go to my local hospital, that it looks like a lot of people that don't look like me are getting preferential treatment. But then equally, it can be that these people have come from a place and maybe they're suffering from something and that's why they're getting it. It doesn't detract from my experience, but there is a truth to it that is not being shared. And I think there needs to be more balanced conversations. We're too quick to be either or. And I think this is something that's used and weaponized often by media, especially the printed media. We need to have more balanced conversations, I feel.
Really interesting. Donna, thank you so much for talking to us this morning. Donna Murray-Turner, community engagement strategist who advises the Metropolitan Police at New Scotland Yard. 12:42 the time. Ben Kentish here with you on LBC. That makes sense to me, doesn't it? If you are in a community and people used to mix and interact and engage with each other and meet each other, maybe for the first time in the pub, or the leisure centre, or the community centre, or even the pier in somewhere like Southport, and all those places have been closed down, boarded up, shut their doors. Where do you mix? How do you have a community where there's nowhere for people to hang out with other people who live in their area? And that is, it's not an exaggeration, that is happening right now. A pub a day is closing in this country. If you live in a village, and the pub is the only place that people go to congregate, and that pub closes, what do? You just stay isolated, don't you? Atomised behind your own doors. Makes sense to me. What about you? If you've got thoughts on that, as always, anything we talk on this programme, always want to get your thoughts on it. 03456060973, the number, as we've been doing for the last 45 minutes or so, with the Lionesses' stunning Euros successes last night. Despite that, they are going to be paid a fraction in prize money. That the men would have got if they had won the Euros last year. Is that fair? To Erebro in Sweden this morning, and Sammy, who's on the line. Morning to you, Sammy.
Good morning, Ben. Pleasure speaking to you. It's been a while.
And you? You doing all right?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I'm good. Buzzing over the Euros. I watched every single game.
I was on the plane home, Sammy, and I watched the highlights, and I was gutted I couldn't watch it live, to be quite honest with you. They're amazing. They are absolutely amazing.
And it is the same sport. It is the same sport, just for the people out there that don't think it's the same sport. It's just the aim is to put the goal in the bracket. But I just want to make a point quickly. I know you have to go to the news and other quarters. Norway Football Association had a meeting a couple of years ago back with the both teams to, and they came to agreement to not cut down on the men's bonuses, but to make it more equal, that the women get more bonus. And I think we've come a long way from 50 years ago, but I don't want to wait 50 years for changes to be made. I think the gap has to be closer. It can't be 200, what did you say, 200 million?
About 250 million euro difference in prize money.
Yeah, that can't be, that's too...
But, Sammy, let me give you some figures in terms of the revenue that the tournament brings in. It's his sponsorship and media rights and all the rest of it. So... The women's Euros that's just finished, won by England, of course, estimated to generate 128 million revenue. The last men's Euros last year estimated to have generated 2.4 billion euros. So when the income, if you are a business, and let's say UEFA is, if you have one event that is bringing in 2.5 billion quid and you've got another that's bringing in 100 million quid... then the prize money for those two is obviously going to be different, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't actually know that. That's fair. That's fair. But to say it's not as entertaining, or to give that the recognition they deserve, I think they can go up a bit, just a bit maybe. They don't have to be as much as the men, but just a bit maybe go up the price.
Sammy, always a pleasure. Thank you for tuning in, as always, from Study Sweden this morning. Talk to Phil and Hendon, lots more of you, about the lionesses and whether they should be paid exactly the same as the men in just a moment. Ben Kentish here with you on LBC The Time. It's 12:46.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Richard Spur.
The co-op's launching a prisoner apprenticeship scheme described as the first of its kind to tackle skill shortages in the railway industry. This morning, what more could be done to make sure former prisoners don't re-offend?
Richard Spur on LBC.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
The people of Britain love their ice baths. They've bought loads of them. With the Barclaycard Platinum, they could also save with 0% interest for up to 24 months on purchases, which is a nice, warm feeling. What you buy is your business. Helping you pay less interest is ours. Subject to financial status, T's and C's and exclusions apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable and 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
Neuromol Dual Action contains the power of ibuprofen
and the strength of paracetamol
combined together to provide faster, longer-lasting, more effective relief than regular painkillers alone. Hit pain hard
with Neuromol Dual Action Pain Relief.
Contains ibuprofen and paracetamol for pain not relieved by regular painkillers, ibuprofen or paracetamol individually.
Always read the label.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no. Me? I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers. Here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in. Kettle's on.
Oh, thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
12:48 is the time. Talk to Phil about the lionesses and whether they should be getting more money. And that's not why they do it, of course. But I can imagine if you have won the Euros twice as a female England player and you know that you are still on course to get far less money in bonuses than the blokes would have got, probably even for getting to the final, well, you might be pretty angry about that and you'd be pretty justified in doing so, wouldn't you? 0345 606 0973. Phil's thoughts on that to come in just a moment. First, though, Nathan's calling from Shepherd's Bush. Nathan, I think you wanted to pick up on the story we were talking about a few minutes ago about the fact 600,000 university graduates are claiming benefits in this country and what's going on. Morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much for including me into this conversation.
Pleasure, sir.
So, yes, this 600,000 figure. I'm born in the 90s, and I come from an age where when you're in school, you're told, go to university. If you don't go to university, you're not necessarily going to be a success. And like the hands-on jobs weren't as considered as highly, whereas an academic approach, going to university, going onwards, was kind of thought as the way to go.
Yeah.
And I will go into my story in just a moment, but the point I want to make is, I think overarches, is that a lot of people have been sold this idea that if you go to university, you will get a job, but it's very archaic. Whereas people who haven't been to university have more vocational skills. They're the people who are really doing doing considerably better in my observation, because they are in demand. Whereas people who've got expensive certificates are one amongst many, and employers have the pick of their choice. Whereas people who have vocational skills are in demand because they're needed by normal people. My particular experience of this is as follows. I come from the socioeconomic breadline. I'm a carer, single-parent household, yet somehow I managed to get myself into university amongst the odds. I studied law. I trained as a barrister. And for the past 6 years, I've been trying to get training as a barrister. I then, with hope over COVID, did a solicitor's course with the hope that that would give me an extra edge that hasn't translated yet into the way I want it to. And then I did a master's hoping, well, now I've got every single piece of paperwork that says, yes, I know the law and I'm quite good at what I can do. But when you're applying for jobs for paralegal roles, or you're applying for a basic receptionist role, you're faced with either rejection. We've had other candidates, and it was a very, very strong cycle this year, or no response at all. So getting a degree, and I can really, what the previous caller said in relation to this topic really resonates, is not a guarantee of security. We can just about make ends meet, or not even make ends meet in my situation, with retail jobs.
Is that what you're doing? So you've got pretty much every qualification under the sun for the job you want to do.
Absolutely.
And you're doing shop work.
Yeah.
Because that's all you've been able to get to pay the bills.
Yeah, and wow. Not even pay the bills. I'm a carer, so it's a symbiotic situation where my money goes with mum's money, and then we're trying to make ends meet with token gas and electric payments, pay as you go bills. It's very, very difficult. You don't even make £1,000 a month sometimes.
And you've done everything really right. You've done everything that was asked of you, that you were told was expected of you. Get the grades, work hard, get the qualifications, and you'll get on.
Yeah.
And
even for those, I'd just like to add that even for those who've got a 2-2 or a first-class degree, first-class degrees, people have a little bit more of a chance. But even if you've got a 2-2 and you've done so, and you've gone through every single stage, there's a degree of competence there that should be recognised.
Yeah.
You're not completely out of it. And that's still something which causes a lot of barriers, presents barriers, which I think is quite unfair, because you've got an over-educated or an over-qualified population or cohort of people who can't add value to the economy, in which the government always say that they want to.
How do you feel about it, Nathan? I mean, are you still hopeful that you'll get there? Because you certainly deserve to from what you've told me.
Well, I have to be, don't I? Because if I don't, the hope is going to come from me. I've got a responsibility to lift myself and my mum out and become socially mobile, you know, along that the career ladder. Because if I don't do it, I don't have a trust fund behind me. I've got to try for myself, and I pray every day that I'll be given a break. I might meet the right person. You never know who's listening. You never know who you're talking to.
Find you if they are, Nathan?
I'll have to give my information over to your...
You do that if you would, because I don't... I mean, I have no leverage. I don't know any law firms. I don't own any law firms. But if I did... Yeah. I'll tell you this, I'd give you a job tomorrow for sure.
That's very kind of you. I appreciate that.
It's not. I mean, you can tell from everything you've said to me, everything you've done, the studies, the determination, the grit. You're going to make a great lawyer. You're going to make a brilliant barrister. You just need the opportunity. You just need the break.
I really do. I really, really do. And that means a lot to me, that fact that you'd even make a proposition like that. Whether it goes anywhere, I don't know, but it means a lot, and I'd be grateful for anybody who would give me an opportunity.
Well, Nathan, honestly, hand on heart, I would, if I could, I'd give you one tomorrow. And I know that doesn't count for anything, because I'm not in a position to. But honestly, somebody will, because you are a very, 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 from what you've said to me, impressive young man.
Thank you very much, kind sir. It's nice to be listened to sometimes, and hearing the story of the previous caller on this topic took away the isolation, because you do feel very isolated. And it's not just me. There are many people like me, but I live in my own shoes, and I know what I go through on a daily basis. And I would welcome any help and any support from anyone. And what you've said nationally means so much. I'm a little bit overwhelmed by
Nathan, that. I mean every word. Honestly, I wish I could do something to help you, because my God, you deserve it. You graft. What are your hours like at the moment?
So, as I said, I'm a carer for my mum.
Yeah.
And I'm doing multiple jobs. So, I have an 8-hour contract where I work. And then I have a 0-hours job whenever I can get those 0 hours. And I do a little bit of agency work, but agency work and these types of jobs are never, ever consistent. So I do mediation. I'm a community mediator. And I try to build up my portfolio of experience like that. But these are voluntary roles. These are jobs which don't have that type of security. Oh. Don't hear me as a sob story. I have to try my best for my own life.
Absolutely. But and you're doing everything you can. Nathan, I don't even know if I'm allowed to do this, to be honest, but leave us your details if you would when you come off air. And if anybody does get in touch, who knows? You never know who's listening and who's got a job going and needs an eager, keen, young future lawyer or barrister.
Thank you.
Nathan's your man. Nathan, thank you. Hang in there. I know you'll get there. I know you'll get there because I can hear the determination and the grit and the resilience in your voice. And it might not be tomorrow or the next week, but you will get there. I have no doubt at all. You take care of yourself. Keep in touch, won't you, Nathan? Thank you very much indeed for calling. What a guy. And this is it. This is, you know, people, they're all working because they're lazy or they're not working because they're lazy or they're work shy or they just want to be on benefits. Next time someone calls in and says that, I might just play Nathan's call to them in return. Thank you, Nathan. You look after yourself. All the best to you and your mum as well. Let's come back to our calls for now, just before I hand over to Richard on the Lionesses. Should they be paid the same as the men? Because right now they're not, despite their stunning success in the second Euros in a row. Phil's in Hendon. Morning, Phil.
Morning. Morning, Ben.
Talk to me. Lionesses.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about the money, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great, you know, and I think they should be knighted. But the thing I noticed around London is, I don't know if you noticed it, when the men play, you've got the flags out everywhere, haven't you? The cars. I didn't see any of that, really. You know what I mean?
It doesn't perhaps capture the country in quite the same way just yet, Phil.
No, and it's a shame because, I mean, even driving up Camden High Street last night at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, could you imagine if the men won? What Camden High Street would be like, you know?
Yeah. It's getting there. I mean, if you were going back even 10 years and the England women's team had won anything, I don't think we would have even known about it, Phil.
I think it's great because, you know, like the men, the women now can come from working class backgrounds and earn a decent living now. I mean, what are the women on Chelsea, Arsenal, Man United, you know,
a fraction of the mad salaries that the men are getting, eh?
Yeah, I mean, what you said earlier about the men, they get a bonus. And what did you say for England if they win the World Cup?
So it's the total figure. So the total figure spread across the team is about 280 million quid. And for the women, it's about 34 million quid. So it's a massive difference.
But most of them men, when they win the World Cup, they're playing for Barcelona. They're on about.
Yeah, they don't need the money. Absolutely. That's a good point.
I don't suppose they'll even know that the bonus is there till 30 years' time. So, good point, by the way. 30 years ago, you got 500 grand bonus for winning the World Cup.
The difference it would make to those players' lives, much, much bigger for the women. Phil, you talking of England football, you know the 1966 squad stayed down your way, don't you?
They stayed in the Hendon Hall Hotel.
They did indeed.
You know, and they went to the Hendon Cinema. I was born 69, Ben, so I didn't see it.
Oh, you just missed it.
But obviously, I know a lot of people from the, you know, over the years that, you know, said that they used to see Bobby Charlton walking about and Nobby Stiles. And, of course, Henry Cooper lived up there as well. So he was part of the scene as well in Hendon.
I knew someone used to just go and nip into their hotel and have a chat with them before the finals and semi-final. He wouldn't get that now, would they? Rings of security and all the rest of it. Phil, I'm out of time. Lovely to talk to you this morning. Thank you, sir. Sorry to Gaz and everyone else I didn't get to. Interesting conversation. Three interesting conversations. As always, lovely to have you with us this morning. Thank you very, very much indeed, as always, for tuning in. Never, ever goes unappreciated. And we do it all again, of course, 10 o'clock tomorrow night. So I hope you'll be back for more then. Lots to talk about then, I have no doubt. Don't forget, if you miss any of tonight's show, you can listen back on both Global Player and the brand new LBC app. You can download that for free from your app store right now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, Richard Spur, right now. No, coming up 4 is Ian Payne, right now. Richard Spur.
I'm not doing 6 hours.
Well.
Not doing 6 hours. Still to come, the former Tory MP Nadine Dorries has been talking about how taking fat jabs made her hair fall out. Well, very few people experience serious side effects from those injections, but have you been tempted to use them? And if you have, how well did they work? But first, the co-op's decided, to begin a prisoner apprenticeship scheme, which it describes as the first of its kind, to tackle the huge deficit of skills in the railway industry. The aim is to diminish the level of recidivism by offering opportunities for employment which are guaranteed. So this morning, where does the balance need to lie when it comes to ex-criminals between punishment and rehabilitation? What strategies do you believe need to be brought into force to make life fairer for former convicts? And to stop them from reoffending. 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Israel's Prime Minister insists his country will work to ensure that large amounts of humanitarian aid flows into the Gaza Strip. It's after two Israeli human rights charities accused the country of committing genocide in the enclave. At a United Nations meeting last night, which Israel didn't attend, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the conflict's reaching breaking point.
We must speak with one voice to condemn all acts of terror, to denounce all targeting of civilians and taking of hostages. And we must call on Israel to recommit clearly and unequivocally to the two-state solution and to cease all actions that undermine it.
Israel denies the claims. It's reported officials in New York say at least two people have been shot, including a police officer in the city. The shooting, described as an active shooter incident, is understood to have happened inside a building on Park Avenue. Two men have died and a third is in a life-threatening condition after four people were stabbed at a business premises in South London. Police were called to an address in Southwark yesterday afternoon. A man in his 30s has been detained in hospital. Rents across Britain have reached new record highs. The average being asked across Britain, excluding London, has reached a record £1,365 per month. That's according to figures from Rightmove covering the second quarter of this year. In London, the average advertised rents also reached a new high at £2,712 per month. The government's legislating to improve rights for tenants. Megan 18 from lettings body Property Mark is concerned landlords may be less inclined to let out their properties.
As it stands, there's a general rhetoric that landlords are sort of being demonised. As a result of that, we're losing landlords, and that's having a greater impact on the rent prices and the availability of homes.
Lionesses fans will have the chance to celebrate with their heroes today as an open-top bus tour will take place in London following their Women's Euros triumph. Serena Wiegmann's squad will parade the trophy along the Mall before homecoming. The homecoming ceremony takes place in front of Buckingham Palace. These fans, who play for a local football team, have told LBC they're an inspiration.
That was a night to remember.
It was a great game. England v Spain's always going to be, but I'm so happy they brought it home again.
LBC weather, largely cloudy with patchy rain over central and southern areas today. A few heavy showers in southern England, dry with sunny spells in the far northeast of Scotland, a high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Richard Spur.
Good morning, I hope you're well. We often talk, don't we, about how overcrowded our prisons are and, you know, whether that means that judges and magistrates should hold back a little before they sentence people to a custodial time behind bars. But this story, which has broken in the last couple of hours, is all about how to rehabilitate prisoners once they leave jail. The Co-op is launching a prisoner apprenticeship scheme, which it describes as the first of its kind, to tackle skills shortages in the railway industry. The programme, in partnership with City and Guilds, aims to reduce reoffending by offering guaranteed employment opportunities. It's a level 2 rail engineering operative apprenticeship, and it will be based at HMP High Point, which is in Suffolk. Claire Costello, the Chief People and Inclusion Officer at the Co-op, said, "Our partnership with City and Guilds Foundation demonstrates the transformative power of targeted training, employment and genuine opportunity. It's great that through our levy initiative we can invest in people and equip them with skills that are high in demand, not just reducing reoffending, but also helping to tackle those critical skills shortages in the UK rail sector, strengthening the fabric of society. We're inviting other businesses to join us in pledging their unspent levy, helping to create more second chances and build a more inclusive workforce across the UK, whilst delivering lasting benefit to communities nationwide." And Kirsty Donnelly, who's the chief exec at the City and Guilds, which I have to say, has been a hugely popular, inclusive and universal qualification now for decades. I think even my grandmother did a City in Guilds back in the 50s. Said apprenticeships have long been one of the most effective ways to gain quality skills and sustained employment. And I am delighted with some of the outcomes already achieved through quality training in the prison estate. And it's quite an uplifting story, really, because there is no question that the level of recidivism, the level of reoffending amongst former prisoners is so unacceptably high that you can only come to the conclusion that prison doesn't work as a rehabilitative force. Yes, it's a punishment. You know, yes, you spend a number of years behind bars and you lose a great number of your freedoms. But when you come out, in my view and in my anecdotal experience, you're far less likely to get a job, to have the morale and the self-respect to go straight, as they used to say, you know, to make a clean breast of it, and become an active member of society again and earn yourself money. So schemes like this, I think, can only do good. This morning, I'd like to explore, and I'd like you to call me and tell me just where you feel that balance should lie between punishment and rehabilitation for prisoners. Because we know that very often people get put into prison for relatively minor crimes and go in perhaps teetotal or, you know, never having taken drugs in their life. They come out addicted to drugs, they come out alcoholics, and inside they have learned skills which will only enable them to commit more serious crimes. And that surely is a deplorable facet of the prison system in this country. Things like this, I think, are very, very much needed. And I just wonder how else you feel we can make life fairer, more constructive, more forgiving for people who have served their sentence, paid their price, done their time, and do have an appetite to work, to earn money honestly, and to be reintegrated into society. On 0345 6060973. And of course, Timpsons is one of those firms which I think Timpsons, they employ, I think it's 40% of their workforce are taken from prisons, people who've been in jail for committing a crime. And it's proved, I think, to be hugely successful. And indeed, their chairman found himself as you know, one of the chief members of Sir Keir Starmer's cabinet, which I happen to think was a very, very good appointment as prisons minister. If you've been in jail, it would be invaluable for me, I think, in the discussion of this subject, to hear your story. What was it like? You know, you hear about having, you know, recreational time in prison, maybe doing things like woodwork, metalwork, learning a craft, learning a skill, working in the kitchens. Many people learn to cook when they're in prison. We're going to be talking about that a little bit later on. Cooking, not prison. You know, what for you would have made that experience? Yes, it's a punishment. Yes, it's intended to be a deterrent for people who commit crimes. But what would have made it better for you as the end product when you went out into the world and needed a job and needed to earn money? Should more firms be not forced, but maybe even financially encouraged to employ former prisoners as part of their workforce in order to give them a chance to show that they have improved themselves, a chance to show that they've learned their lesson, a chance to show that they can once again be useful, honest,